is done.
Suckers!
You know what? Let me just take a quick sip of my magical podcasting serum. Oh, that's going to work out just nice, boys. Just nice. Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club, episode 165. Does that sound right?
165. That is correct.
165. 165. Everybody doing okay? It's been a minute since I've seen you, boys.
Oh, I'm doing good. I just cracked a whiff of this, and it is like citrusy, hoppy. I mean, I'm interested.
My beer smells very well. I've noticed the aroma of my beer as well. I think it's a good sign. We're in for a good show. You know, boys, every once in a while I stumble across a news article that leaves me shaking my head. Actually, that happens quite often these days, if I'm being honest. I think probably the same with you guys. And this week I saw something that I felt compelled to share with you guys and get your take on. Have you guys ever heard of Flacco the Owl?
No.
The doctor looks like he might have heard of Flacco the Owl.
I think I saw it on like a Saturday Night Live skit recently.
Is he related to Joe Flacco that was the quarterback? No,
one C.
Oh, no, then I don't know Flacco the Owl.
All right. Well, it was big news last week. You might have seen it on Saturday Night Live on the news. Maybe they did a skit about it. It was big news in New York City. Flacco was a rare Eurasian eagle owl who lived in the Central Park Zoo until he was reported missing from his exhibit last February, 2023. It was later revealed that vandals had cut Flacco's stainless steel mesh cage and set the owl free into the skies of New York City. Against all odds, Flacco survived on his own, despite fears that his plush life at the zoo, you know, he had fed and tended to by the zoo workers. They're worried about him, and they figured he was set up to fail out in the wild. But that wasn't the case. And his inspiring life was cut tragically short February 23rd of this year. And here's a brief recap of the article I read published March 26th, so about a week ago. Here's the headline. Flacco the Owl's cause of death revealed. Beloved bird was suffering from pigeon herpes and had ingested rat poison before flying into glass building, necropsy shows. Here's a brief summation of the article. If Flacco the Owl had not died when he flew into an Upper West Side building, he would have been killed by pigeon herpes and rat poison that he had in his system from eating feral pests, a necropsy report has revealed. Flacco had captivated the hearts and minds of New Yorkers, soaring over Central Park and hooting from the trees after vandals helped him escape captivity last year. Hundreds turned out for his funeral last month, gathering to weep at his favorite haunts after he was found lying dead in a courtyard on February 23rd. A month later, a autopsy report has finally revealed his cause of death to be, quote, traumatic injuries from flying into a building. Duh, no shit. But the report found he also had pigeon herpes and rat poison in his system that would have killed him sooner or later. The report said these factors would have been debilitating and ultimately fatal, even without a traumatic injury, and may have predisposed him to flying into or falling from the building. So the pigeon herpes might have actually caused him to soar into the Upper West Side building. There was more written as far as the details of his life, but who gives a shit? So I'm going to stop there. It's fucking owl. I think it's fair to say, follow me on this, Flacco had a darkness within him that few of his admirers were aware of. Sheesh. My main issue with all this is a simple one. This Flacco was a fucking celebrity. He was like the owl in New York City, on the West Side at that. And he's banging pigeons?
I don't think it was because he was banging pigeons.
Come on, Flacco. Listen, Yax, come on, Flacco. If it was African parrot herpes or toucan herpes, hey, I wouldn't even be mentioning it. In fact, I might be filling up the boot of remembrance tonight for old Flacco, if that was the case. You know, God rest your nocturnal ass. But
hey, you know what? I like the pigeon herpes. It means he's one of us. He's not out there fooling around with these high class birds, you know? He's one of us. He's a regular bird.
Fucking pigeon herpes. These shit machines, let me tell you something about pigeons. These shit machines are known for two things: crapping on statues and delivering anonymous, disturbing letters to the doctor's ex-girlfriends. Oops. Was I not supposed to say anything about that, doctor? I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, technically, how would you know about it that they were anonymous unless you're the one who's using the pigeons to send the letters?
I may have seen a mesh cage up on your rooftop. So anyway, hey, doctor, I think we can all agree that hopefully some of that nasty pigeon herpes rubbed off on those scandalous hussies. Am I right?
I still have some questions about how you're aware of the pigeons carrying the letters.
And
does answer some questions.
I'm sure that Flacco did not expect, nor did he want, an autopsy to be done. It's a fucking bird. You know, he's laying there on the ground, taking his last few breaths, thinking, you know, I had a good run. The important thing here is I'm a fucking bird who flew into a building. Happens every day. It's not like they're going to cut me open and perform a fucking autopsy or anything. I'm a fucking bird.
Why did you perform an autopsy? I mean, the bird hit a building.
Thank God my legacy won't be tarnished by revealing my embarrassing pigeon herpes or my shameful rat poison addiction. They'll just put me in a shoebox, bury me a foot in Central Park, and that'll be that. End of story. Now, human beings, we just can't leave well enough alone.
Well, it could have been murder. Murder has That's to right. be investigated.
And what are they going to do then? Call in the CSI boys to follow the clues? Start hanging around the New York City Library, around the statues, asking the pigeons questions.
Did you haven't seen the latest show on CBS, CSI Owl Investigations? Really could, man. It could. They, dude, you put that next to So Help Me Todd, and you've got 2 hours of TV.
Well, look, I need you three dudes to promise me something. When I die, an autopsy.
Any promises now?
When I die, an autopsy will not be performed. I was drunk as a skunk when I walked face first into that glass building. It had, you know what? I was drinking my usual four loco sour apple martinis like I always do. End of story. Drunk ass died. And that's the only thing I had going on with me.
The dude's BAC was through the roof, but he also had pigeon herpes.
If I test positive in my autopsy for pigeon herpes, just know it's a conspiracy originated from other cigar media who are jealous of my good looks, my sharp wit. Case closed.
Frank? It looks like this bird has flown the coop.
Who?
Because owls say who.
Yeah, they do. Well, not Flacco. He doesn't say anything anymore. Thanks to the pigeon herpes.
Damn pigeon herpes.
Thought that was the rat poison.
I like how quickly Yak Boy jumped in. You know, you don't have to necessarily have sex with a pigeon to get pigeon herpes. You sure got on that real fast.
I'm just saying. Science. Science is never wrong.
You get it using the public restrooms.
Oh, the owl could have just used a dirty public restroom and gotten pigeon herpes.
Perhaps a dirty needle.
Hey, maybe he was shooting up that rat poison. I don't know. I think there's a lot to Flacco's life once he got free that we don't know about. And
well, Frank, sounds like a bird in the hand, two in the bush wasn't a euphemism this time.
Yeah.
Sorry, they'll get better as the show goes on and I drink more.
Just cue up that saxophone in the background. You belong to
concrete under your feet. Okay, well, that I knew you guys would provide some invaluable insight into the story of Flacco. And no, I just want to make that very clear. He was no relation to Joe Flacco, the backup quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, is that where Flacco's at now?
Yeah, you took him on a playoff run last year. Although they're the Browns, so they probably got rid of him. We don't reward greatness around here.
Let's go with the guy that we've overpaid and continuously gets hurt. I've got a feeling this season's going to be different.
It's the Browns' way.
It is the Browns' way.
Well, folks, pigeon herpes aside, and I swear to God, if any of you say tonight's cigar has notes of pigeon herpes, yak boy, you seem to be real familiar.
I was going to say, I detected an aroma of rat poison.
Well, I hope not too soon, because I only dipped it in a little rat poison. And it's only in one of you or Tut's cigars, so tonight should be interesting. Speaking of cigars, that's what we do here, folks. Every episode, we pair a premium cigar with some premium craft beverages, hopefully, and we talk about a movie. So let's go ahead and introduce tonight's cigar. Now, what you're going to see on the episode page on the TNCC website, and Tut is holding up for you on the screen here, is not the official banding of the cigar. This is, we were provided these as a, excuse me, Drew State does a event occasionally called Facebook Live, Freestyle Live, I'm sorry, on Facebook and YouTube, where they ship out. Consumers can go buy these Freestyle Live packs. They usually include like a cigar stand, a lighter, travel case, and three or four mystery cigars. This cigar says FSL, Freestyle Live, March 2024. So last month, this cigar was a total mystery. And it was revealed by JD, Jonathan Drew, Willie Herrera, and the Drew Estate team on the last Freestyle Live that this mystery cigar, which, by the way, on the Drew Estate fans group on Facebook, I was the only one to guess correctly, I believe. Yeah, everybody was saying this is a Connecticut Nica Rustica. Or some were saying it was a Connecticut Liga Privada, 9 Connecticut. But I reviewed...
Nine Connecticut would be interesting.
A few weeks ago, I reviewed the M81 Blackened cigar from Drew Estate. You can check out that review on our website. And I just happened to, later that night, smoke one of these mystery cigars, and there was something...
A little
similarities there, which is weird, because this is obviously a Connecticut lighter-shaped cigar. And that is an all Maduro blend of dark, scary Maduro leaves. But there was a saltiness and a mustiness on the back end of the retrohale behind the pepper that, boy, it just, if I hadn't smoked them the same day, I probably would never have made the connection. But sure enough, what you're holding in your hand, boys, Yak Boy and Tuttle, Doctor, I don't know what you're holding in your hand.
Hey.
Okay. Is the S84 Shade to Black by Drew Estate, which, of course, if you're a Metallica fan, is a riff on – hey, I use the word riff – is a riff on their classic song from 1984, Fade to Black. This is the Shade to Black. And S84 is, of course – 1984 is the year that the Ride the Lightning album came out. Classics, Metallica's sophomore album after Kill 'Em All, right before Master of Puppets. And I'm going to let the people that made the cigar tell you the rest about it. Following the resounding success of Drew Estate's partnership with Blackened Whiskey on Blackened Cigars M81 Maduro to the Core in 2022, Drew Estate announces the new Connecticut Shade Rat brand release and shipping of Blackened S84, Shade to Black. The cigars are a passion project between Rob Dietrich, the master distiller and blender of Blackened Whiskey, James Hetfield, Metallica co-founder, singer, and guitarist, and Jonathan Drew, founder and president of Drew Estate. Hetfield and Dietrich worked closely with Drew, a friend of Dietrich's for over a decade, to create the perfect blend for the cigar. The blackened S84 Shade to Black takes aficionados on a nuanced journey with its deliciously smooth and inviting blend. James Hetfield of Metallica shares his excitement, stating, "Shade to Black is more than just a cigar for us. It's a celebration of passion and a tribute to the craftsmen who strives for excellence in their lives." In other words, this cigar is for the real ones out there, not the filthy perverts like Flacco the Owl with his pigeon herpes having ass.
Not for the pullers and tuggers.
It is a 6x52, exactly, Tut, not for the pullers and tuggers. It is a 6x52 Toro, Connecticut Ecuador wrapper. Now get this, the binder and the filler are the same as the M81. Connecticut River Valley Broadleaf Maduro binder, Nicaraguan Maduro, and Pennsylvania Broadleaf Maduro filler. So really, I'm sure they tweaked the ratios a little bit maybe inside, but really, component-wise, the only thing new is the wrapper. So it'll be interesting to see, Tut. I know you've smoked a bunch of the Blackens. It'll be interesting to get your thoughts.
I'm really liking this. There's something across that palate that I'm just not able to identify. And it's sitting like right on, you know, those two glands that you have on the very edge of the tongue. It's sitting like right there, and it's tasty, and I just can't figure out what it is. I was not expecting this. I've been kind of like on an uber rustic Maduro kick lately. I mean, just like the filthier, the dirtier, the better. And yeah, man, that shade on there just brings out a neat little zang to it. It's God, what the hell am I tasting?
There's some earthiness. There's some earthiness and a little sweetness on the cold draw.
Yeah, and you get that beautiful hay smell on before winding it up.
The hay on the wrapper is undeniable for sure. But then, yeah, but really just some sweetness, little earthiness on there, and then I'm gonna fire it up. Yak boy, have you lit up yet?
I have. No, I'm very much the same way on the cold draw. The aroma on the wrapper, all what you just said, the hay, just very light. When I first lit up, I mean, just a, you know, it had a touch of, you know, that's spice.
Oh, right, man. Now,
I'm just trying to get it.
Oh, this smells really good. And it's got good aroma pouring off the foot as I toast things, get it going. Let me.
Well, that is fucking interesting.
Oh, that's a nice cracking white pepper through the nose.
This is going to sound stupid, and it's going to sound markety, and I'm sorry for it sounding markety.
Just don't say it then.
Okay.
No, I'm teasing.
All right, so you inhale, or you take it in across the palate, you retrohale, and you let it sit. There's an aftertaste there, and I'll be damned if my taste buds aren't going, you know what? It's kind of reminiscent of chicken fried steak gravy. There's a bit of pepper that sits there on the tongue, but there's also a creaminess, and I don't get cream ever. And that's what my taste buds are telling me.
I'm actually getting a Salisbury steak gravy sensation through the back of the retrohale.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Not chicken fried steak itself, just the gravy?
I was thinking more au jus, but that's...
Nah, just the gravy. Just the gravy. Man, that is so badass.
I'm going to say real quick, right now I was concentrating on the retro hill first here, and there is it's a much less pepper kick than the M81
mm-hmm.
Maduro. It's a It's a very distinct spice, but it's medium at best, and it's nice. And then, man, I'm just getting some really nice leather and some cedar come through the draw. No chicken fried steak gravy. I'll
Yeah,
just say this.
I'm all on it.
I'll just say this. When I found out that this was a new Metallica cigar from Drew Estate, I found myself, it's hard to get excited in the cigar world these days, especially when you're battle-weary guys who've been doing this shit as long as we have. You can slap a cool, you know, band on a cigar, come out with a cool box. But I just kind of had this moment where I'm like, you know, how cool is this? One of the bands that I idolized growing up, and not, I'm not using that lightly. Like, I had Metallica posters all over. Doctor can attest to this. All, not just posters, ripped pages out of Rip magazine on
Dude,
the
in
walls.
junior high, I would say Cade had a t-shirt. He could wear a different Metallica t-shirt every day for about 2 weeks when we were in junior high.
And that's when shit wasn't easy. I had to send away for that shit. I had to cut out ads in Circus magazine and send away for God, who's that artist that did all the great Metallica stuff? It's like Nimrod or God, what was that guy's
Or
name?
if they
Pinhead.
sold them, you had to go because they didn't have the store like this out.
Pusshead. Sorry, it was Pusshead.
Temple Mall, you had to go to like the Austin or Killeen Mall to like a Gadzooks, and they were ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, but to get the good ones, like the ones that they were using on tour, you had to send away. And I had, you know, I had a Slayer patch on my jean jacket and a Metallica patch. And I just had this moment when I found out that it was a new Metallica cigar. It almost hit me more than the first Metallica cigar. I was just like, man, how cool was that? Like, my youthful kind of world that I was obsessed with is now like fully entrenched with the cigar company that made me fall in love with premium cigars, Drew Estate. And I'm like, that's really fucking weird and really cool in a way. And that something from your childhood and something from you now find a way to get like Jonathan Drew and who, you know, the godfather of the rebirth of cigars, the guy who made the league, you know, responsible for the League of Nine that got me to really just fall head over heels in love with his industry, blended a cigar with the fucking lead singer Metallica. Like, that's crazy. It just on a personal level, it just kind of was like, I just had a moment where I was like, this is really fucking cool. I hope I don't hate the cigar, and I don't.
Can I go full Tut on you?
Yeah.
Lame. The idea of it.
Huh?
Lame. It's
Lame?
lame. Lame. Next thing
I'm
you know,
lame?
you're gonna have like a Carrie Underwood blend cigar, and then you're gonna have like a Faith Hill blend cigar. I'll be like, oh, we're trying to get this demographic, and hey, we're trying to get this demographic. The only reason why I give the Blackened series a f is because it's good. It's not, I mean, it's just good. They're good
Okay,
cigars,
but
and I.
what about this? I'm scrolling on Facebook and you know when you scroll down and then there's the reels, the little videos that come up through your Facebook feed.
Oh yeah, I hate those.
There's reels of James Hetfield coming off stage while Kirk's doing a guitar solo. A dude's got a fucking blackened cigar ready for him. He puts it in his mouth, lights it,
That's called marketing, dude.
sits down for about a minute and smokes. I'm just saying, I don't think, would you say a Reba McEntire cigar? I don't think Reba's going to be fucking firing up smoking a goddamn cigar.
No, what Reba's going to be doing is Reba's going to be out in the tobacco field with a leaf. One chance leaf, don't let me down.
Hey,
That's
you
going to
know,
be on the cover art. I mean,
Espinosa makes a really A couple really fucking good cigars with Guy Fieri. I happen to think they're phenomenal cigars. Guy Fieri does events all over the country supporting. Yeah, of course, Tut. They want to make money. They're not doing this for fun.
I know that, but like, okay, so if you tell me that you're in a collaboration with Guy Fieri, I'm like, that's kind of interesting because that's a chef. He's all about tastes and stuff. And then when you tell me, oh, it's a collaboration with Hetfield, I'm going to be like, huh?
Oh, yeah, what? Because – yeah, because
Hetfield not allowed to have any tastes?
No, no, no.
No, he is, but because I mean, it's Metallica, like, all right.
Metallica,
it's like, then why don't you say it's a collaboration with Tuttle? You know why you don't say it's a collaboration with Tuttle? Because nobody knows who the fuck Tuttle is.
Well, you'd assume it tastes like pigeon herpes. Dude, Metallica has been in the Metallica has been in the whiskey business for years. You're telling me that's not a logical connection with whiskey and cigars?
I'm just saying that I don't like this trend. I don't like the whole celebrity collab trend. It's nothing against Metallica and all that. Like I said, the cigar is really good. I'll tell you what it is when you talked about saying, you know, especially when you're a crusty veteran. No, this is the stuff I look for. This is the stuff. This is the reason why I keep trying blend after blend is because I want something that's a little bit unique. This delivers it.
You're talking about a band that resisted putting out a music video in the heyday of MTV when they could have sold a gazillion more records and they didn't want to do it. You're talking about a dude. So you have a problem with Billy Gould of Faith No More coming out with his own rock? Yeah.
No, it's a passion project.
Ted Bill's a cigar smoker. He can't be passionate about cigars. He doesn't need the money.
He totally can.
I without Googling it.
But Chad, how many other people are going to be out there just collabing? And I'm going to hold you to it. Every time I see a celebrity collab on a cigar, I'm going to be like, shut up and enjoy the cigar. And it's all about the taste. It's not about marketing. It's not about branding. It's all about that guy has good taste. And matter of fact, I'm going to use this argument a little later when we get into our movie tonight.
Well, there were
a lot of people just collecting checks in tonight's movie. That's for certain.
I would like to jump in there for a second because while I understand the emotion behind what you're saying, Tut, unfortunately, I really can't disagree with you more because every single consumer product, and a cigar is a consumer product, has an ad agency and a marketing campaign behind it. So, you know, to me, I actually, from what I've read, and Kate has just talked about it, James Hetfield seems like he is a real deal who enjoys cigars. So it's actually a good fit for him. To Kate's point, he doesn't need the money. But, okay, yeah. You know what? When I see the Casamigos commercial and they show George Clooney on his motorcycle and he's out in the field with the Mexican workers and he holds up his glass of tequila, and it's like George Clooney's never in his life gone out into a field with a bunch of blue collar workers and held up tequila. But everything has a marketing campaign behind it. And I mean, guess what?
Casamigos is a wonderful, fantastic tequila. And George Clooney is a known heavy drinker. It makes sense.
What I'm getting at is Drew Estate wants to sell cigars and make money. So they found somebody they could partner with to market it. Of course, there's a marketing campaign behind it. I don't think, you know, if it's just like, just be about the taste, not the marketing, then that person's going to have a lot harder time selling cigars.
No, they're not. In this industry, that's all the marketing you need. I mean, at least to get you through one season, because they're coming out with new brands constantly. You don't have to try to maintain brand loyalty on these celebrity cigars. You just hit it, boom, go. And that's, you know, it's a shame. I'm not saying that's what Drew Estate's doing at all. I'm not saying that at all. This is a good cigar, but
consumers. We are bombarded with images in order to try and brainwash into buying products, and that's been going on for 50 years. And why would a cigar company that has the money to partner with a recognizable person be any different? I was just making fun of Clooney on the motorcycle. I was making fun of the marketing campaign itself. They absolutely ought to do it.
Yeah, the marketing campaign for these the marketing campaign for the Blackened cigars shows Hetfield sitting in a lounge with Rob Dietrich, the black and whiskey guy, and Jonathan Drew smoking cigars. The guy's been a cigar smoker for years. I think to say that, I think it all just comes down to Metallica's a band that has said no to more shit than they've said yes to, that could have easily made them millions of dollars. He seems pretty fucking into this. So does Guy Fieri. He seems really in, and he seems really taken with when once he stepped foot and dipped his toes in the premium cigar world. Holy shit, this is a passionate fan base of millions and millions of people. I dig it. They look at cigars like my people look at food, as far as the components, as far as the flavors. Like, to say that just on the surface, well, that's disingenuous, they're just in it for the money, I don't think you can do that.
I didn't say that. Not in this case. I'm just saying I don't like the trend of it. Because it's, yes, okay, everything that you're saying, let's say it's absolutely true. Hetfield is a cigar aficionado who's been dreaming of making a cigar blend for the last 20 years. He finally gets a shot. Drew Estate brings it in. There you go. It's great. Now all of a sudden, here comes J-Lo, and she's doing a collaboration with Sweet Jane. And it's right. J-Lo's Rose.
Michael Jordan doing Gatorade commercials 30 years ago. How's this any different from that?
It's fine, other than I don't like it. But Jordan, I can sit there and say I don't like sitting there watching J-Lo in a Fiat commercial because I know J-Lo's never sat inside a Fiat in her life.
Well, she also didn't have any input into the engine of the Fiat, and Jordan had no input to the ingredients of Gatorade. They actually show Hetfield with samples of, you know, going through the original Blacken, trying to find something that was what he was looking for. Now, I'll give you an example of one to me that screamed the minute it was announced. I was like, this is such hype. And I'm not going to say hype because it wasn't like Illusione did a cigar maybe 2 years ago with Jeremy Piven.
I hear he's a big cigar smoker.
And it was like an $18 cigar. It was this expensive cigar, and he went to a few events. Haven't heard about it since. Haven't heard from Piven about it. Haven't heard about the cigar ever since. there's several instances of that. Many with athletes, though. They'll do athlete based cigars. This to me. M81 was successful, went back to the drawing boards, came up with an alternative. Hetfield, you know, seems excited about that. He's not doing – these aren't Metallica videos that I'm watching of him smoking. These are fan videos of him in the pit having a smoke.
But that's one of the things that makes this project a little bit different, is that they've come back for a second iteration or a second product in this line. It wasn't just a one-off money grab. If people would have criticized the original Blackened as a money grab, I would have had no defense for it because, like you said, it happens a lot. But the fact that it was successful, popularized, and they're coming back with a different iteration, you know, now it's not just a, you know, take the money and run.
And Guy Fieri's on his like sixth or seventh, and he's at PCA every year, and he's around the country events. I think there are cases that what you're saying rings true, Tut. And I agree. If there becomes a fucking Reba McEntire cigar, I will be the first one to stand up and say, no. No.
Hi, I'm Dolly Parton, and I only shoot up Oklahoma black tar heroin.
And that's fine because Dolly is a national treasure. She can do no wrong.
Yeah, see.
Oh. What if she had pigeon herpes?
I fall for this with products I buy.
Yaks, I'm not saying she did get pigeon herpes, and I'm not saying she didn't. But yes, Dolly.
It was her that killed Flacco.
Her people killed Flacco. He knew too much. On his deathbed, he's laying there after he smacked into that building. The answers are at Dollywood. Okay, well, I didn't expect to get into all that. But I guess we didn't review the first one on the show, so we never really talked about that aspect of it.
I also like it because we get to flex our tobacco roots.
Man, it's smoking. Look at that ash.
By the way, it is transferred in, oh yeah, that looks nice. It is transferred into the on the sitting on the back of the pallet into toasted marshmallow.
I agree with Tut.
On the draw?
Just it has
When it just sits
that
there for a little bit.
sweetness. Touch a gram in there.
Through the draw, not
Yeah,
through the.
look, across the palette, like just take your draw, retrohale it, let it sit a little bit. That aftertaste that's sitting there in your mouth,
Oh, so
toasted marshmallow.
the
Yeah.
finish is charred. You know, I got charred marshmallow last show on whatever we were smoking. You looked at me like I was crazy. You said it was something, some other, and you said you also get a little bit of graham on the finish.
Well,
Pretty.
and I'm trying to do that because I was like, yes, that marshmallow, but I'm picking up like that sort of that sweet cookie type thing, and I'm not sure if it's my beer, but I'm thinking it's the cigar.
Okay, well, hey, that's a good segue into tonight's the second component of what we do here, the beers, the booze. I am drinking the Pigeon Herpes IPA from Brooklyn Hipster
Blackman Brewing. Is
Brewery.
that a hazy IPA or was it San Diego?
It's a hazy San Diego.
Okay.
Notes of rat poison on the
Yeah. You know
finish.
what? Yaks. I think everybody's gonna have, I have a feeling everybody's gonna have some interesting cigars tonight, and I'm about to go get another one, so why don't we kick off with me for once? Tell everybody what I'm drinking.
The Fresh Kicks Hazy IPA, Real Ale Brewing, 6.6%, 40 IBUs. Of course, Real Ale, very well liked on TNCC. We've had their Axis IPA. And of course, always they're one of our favorites, the Hans Pils.
The only Pilsner I drink? Well, until they change the cans.
Well, look, can't you keep it?
Hey,
You could have tried different things.
presentation matters. They had a great can and they blew it.
They had a great can. It was a nice can.
I picked tonight's beer because we are going to be discussing the new Roadhouse movie, which I was hoping, hey, if you're going to make a new Roadhouse, there's got to be some fresh kicks in it, right? There's a lot of kicking in Roadhouse, and well, there was nothing fresh about the new Roadhouse, and there was no. Literally, almost no kicking. So
Boy, what are you talking about, son?
I had to go to the beer to get my fresh kicks because I didn't get it from the steaming pile of dog shit movie that we're going to talk about later. Man, it's a really good hazy. It's got really tropical flavors. I think there's some Mosaic and Amarillo hops in there that always give you that kind of citrus aroma. It's not very bitter, but that's working out great with the cigar. It's really letting me get the kind of the creaminess and everything coming through on the draw. I'm a little behind you boys, so I haven't gotten the chocolate chip cookies or the graham cracker and marshmallow s'mores yet. I'm hoping to get that here in a minute. No, Real Ale's a real one. I like their stuff a lot, and this beer is very good. So, and it's 40 IBUs. It's not interfering at all with the cigar. It's a good pairing. It's working out really well for me. And while I get another one, you know what? I'm just gonna say this. Thank God he never looks at the TNCC website and looks at his pairing grades. I am so proud of the doctor tonight. The doctor put on his big boy podcasting pants, said, "You know what? I'm doing this. I am going to blow this crew out of the goddamn water," and he stepped up, and I'm not even talking about, this isn't a home run. This is a grand slam of epic. Now, granted, I can't say pairing proportions because he's not able to smoke a cigar with us, but film pairing proportions. So technically he can only get about a D plus, but
Jesus Christ.
I am so proud of you, Doc. Show us what you got, and Cody, tell us all about it.
Good doctor is having proper 12. Proper 12 Irish whiskey made in collaboration by none other than Conor McGregor
Another
himself.
collab.
Conor McGregor of the oh yeah, I'd like to hear you talk shit about his collaboration.
I ain't talking shit about Conor McGregor at all.
Right. God damn right you're not.
Going back to 2018, it is a blended Scotch or Irish whiskey from single malt. It was named after. The proper 12 actually comes from Dublin 12, which is a postal code area for Dublin, of which where McGregor grew up, which is named Crumlin. So it goes back to his youth.
Okay.
So I named it that.
I should mention if you're living in a cave, the new Roadhouse 2024 is the Roadhouse stars UFC veteran Conor McGregor. And when the doctor said I'll probably go pick up some of that. You see commercials for it all the time. I was like, yeah, it'd be nice if he did, but I'm not going to hold my breath. He's going to come with his Oberon Weedale. And then he got it. He got it.
I've only made the Oberon Weedale mistake once. I won't be making it again. But yes, I did go to my local liquor confectionery store and pick up a bottle of the proper 12 Irish whiskey.
And you said pre-show it's good.
It is very good. I will also say that the retail price is extremely agreeable. I purchased this in a Goody Goody, which is a big giant liquor store. Yeah. Not quite as big as like a Specs and a Total Wine, but a pretty big store. I believe it was $24.98 for the good big boy bottle, which is to me very inexpensive. You know, obviously there's different types of whiskeys. You have your Scotch, your bourbon, and your Irish whiskey. This is very smooth. I have been putting a substantial amount of ice in it, but really just cutting it with a little water. Really, just you need to cut it with something rather than drinking just over the ice. So just cutting it with a little water, but it is extremely smooth. It's got that kind of Irish whiskey smell to it, but I wholeheartedly recommend Conor McGregor's Proper 12 Irish whiskey if you get a chance. Now there's a second flavor. There was some kind of like apple flavored one. I don't fuck with any of that. I ain't doing that. I've never done that with my whiskeys. I know Crown Royal has like an apple flavor. I don't do that. So I can't vouch for the apple one, but just the regular Irish whiskey one. If you are a fan of whiskey, I wholeheartedly recommend it. And I would say that ice cubes and maybe just a little bottled water or a little mineral water. I can't imagine. I know some people like to mix it with ginger ale, but man, this is really smooth. I would just say some ice and water would be all I would cut it with. It is very tasty.
I'll definitely give it a try because I mean it sounds interesting, but I'm actually more interested to try the Conor McGregor Reba McEntire collab on the Apple Proper 12.
There is no such product. There is an Apple product, but I do not believe that Conor McGregor is partnered with Reba McEntire on anything.
And I think it's safe to say, because he seems like one of those dudes that kind of pays attention to online trolls and can kind of get baited into some, like, I don't think there's any guys with some sense in their heads that's going to shit on his whiskey. Ugh.
Are you suggesting, Cade, that I am being disingenuous in my
No, brain? No, I know you. I've known you for 40 years. I know that your opinion is solid as the day is long. I'm saying other online beer, cigar, film podcasters could probably maybe be a little intimidated to criticize. But you know what? I'm going to criticize the hell out of the movies, and so I guess.
I was about to say other cigar podcasters, yes, but not the TNCC. TNCC, big huevos.
Yeah. Yeah. Take that, Reba McEntire.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad it's good, and I'm glad you picked it up. I'll do the same. I'll give it a shot.
Now I got this stupid
Also,
fancy
I should
song
like
in
to
my
point
head.
out too, you know what, Cade?
Yeah.
It's working.
Right.
Robert, you sons of bitches.
Tut, what are you drinking?
What am I drinking, Yax?
He has the Secret Beach IPA, Meanwhile Brewing, out of Austin, Texas.
Meanwhile, in Austin, Texas.
Oh, God.
Which I was really hoping that they actually did have a beer called Halls of Justice, just so they could drink it. Meanwhile, the Halls of Justice.
There's no beaches in Austin.
It's a secret beach.
There's some beaches, little beaches at Lake Travis and other places. So you got to have one to go to Hippie Hollow and places like that. Or what they used to call Hippie Hollow. I don't know what it's called now.
It's called Trump Condos.
Back in the 90s when we were walking in barefoot down to Hippie Hollow, I'm just between us boys. I spent a weekend down there in college, and I came back with a wicked ass case of pigeon herpes.
Pigeon herpes. If you all do it.
I was smoking
but now
weed.
The secret beach.
I was smoking some primo grass with this cool owl named Flacco. Asked me if I wanted to freebase some rat poison. I was like, that's not really my thing, man. And he was like, all right. And then he gave me a drink. I didn't see him pour it, but I got a little woozy afterwards, and 3 days later, I test positive for fucking pigeon herpes.
Wasn't the problem, though, that grass was endorsed by former presidential candidate Bob Dole?
It was the 90s. Is it good, Tut?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
You know
well,
what?
It really is described as having marmalade, blueberries, and the devil's lettuce.
I don't get any of that, but I do taste the devil's lettuce.
You're getting marijuana in it?
No, I'm not getting that.
I like this.
I'm not quite sure why anyone would describe it as the devil's lettuce.
Dude, I love this. The goat. I looked when Tut sent you the beer he's doing. I looked it up, and on their webs, this is the most Austin fucking thing I've ever read. Goes well with. Like food pairings,
pea soup,
California burritos, Takis Fuego, which are these little spicy chips that my kid eats, char-grilled vegetables.
Oh, please tell me South Korean street tacos.
Lazy beach afternoons. Char-grilled vegetables. Give me a fucking break.
It's actually really good. It's light. It's got a great citrus smell coming off of it. It's not too citrusy, but it's got a presence there. The hops, I'm not an IPA drinker, but to me, I would put it like a 55. You know, it's pretty, you know, it's kind of hoppy, but it's not really that, it's not bitter that much. It's got a little bit of a bite. Stop laughing, Mincy. I just find it good.
Maybe that's the devil's lettuce talking.
That is the devil's lettuce talking. Is it pairing well with a cigar?
I'm giving it lots of space. The cigar has a lot of interesting stuff going on. I don't want the beer to push it out of the way, and it kind of can.
You don't want that marmalade to interfere with your
I don't want blueberries
and
I don't want blueberries and devil's lettuce mixing in with my toasted marshmallows, man. I mean, come on.
Okay. Well, finally, Yagboy, our resident beer expert and handsomest bartender at O'Brien's Irish Pub in downtown. Historic.
Bless you.
Historic Temple, Texas. Guys, I have about 2 hours left before my allergy pill totally gives out. So, I'm trying to do the pollen here in Central Texas. I walk out
it's
to my
nuts.
Truck. I literally like, walk out to my truck.
Sounds like pigeon herpes to me.
I may have partaken in some of the devil's lettuce earlier. I do have pigeon herpes. And there's no shame in that.
Sounds
maybe. Maybe you should look in the mirror, guys.
There's a little shame in that. I'm
I was bluffing. There's a lot of shame. It's the worst thing you can have. I don't want to be known as the weird dude who did stuff with pigeons. I was on the roof of doctor's office. I saw the cage with all the pigeons. They had these little messages.
Otto was there, gave you some dole pills, and there you go.
I was just going to read the little messages tied around their necks. And one thing you know, I had some Chianti, and I woke up with pigeon herpes.
Wasn't the experiment that I was intending, but experiment nonetheless.
Who? Yak Boy, what are you drinking?
Well, from Melvin Brewing out of Alpine, Wyoming, I am having the Asterisk Imperial IPA. Just like our movie needed an asterisk in the title.
To let us know
that in title only, this movie is only similar in title only.
Brilliant. Brilliant. You may have just earned you a C+, pal.
Would it be more accurate to say it was more like a C*?
He might get an asterisk. Man, that's a good call. Man, have we ever had a Wyoming beer before?
I was the first one. I saw this and I was curious because I thought, because there is a brewery called Symbol Brewing, and I had the symbol. I was like, but then I realized it was actually I had never heard of Melvin before, so I thought I'd give it a whirl.
I like the band, the Melvins.
I don't know if they have just Melvin Brewing.
Oh God, they're like the most authentic heart. They've been in the game for decades. If they came out with a cigar, Tut would lose his fucking mind. But anyway, yeah, Melvin's rock. So is it good?
It is 9%. So like I said, but it is an Imperial IPA. So it's pretty high up there. It says it's like 80 IBUs, but I would probably knock that down at about 50 or 60.
I find
but it
most
does have a really good sort of citrus component to it. It's not hazy. So, but like I said, I was concerned because I was my, the way it was interacting with the cigar, whether or not it was because of that citrus component, was it making the cigar, was it giving it a sweetness? Because it had that strong hay sort of, bit of earth smell to it. I didn't know if this adding a sweeter component was going to interact with that on the cigar. I don't think it is. I'm still getting a really strong sort of sweetness from my cigar. And I don't know if that was, I don't think that's the beer.
No, there's definitely a sweet component, especially on the retrohale. And then right after the retrohale sits on the palate a little bit. Yeah, the pepper is, very, very nice. Not overpowering at all.
The pepper is very consistent.
Yeah. It's, man, I'm sorry. I interrupted your beer talk. Go ahead.
That's just what I thought.
That's weird, Yaks, that it's citrus forward. I've found with most of the Imperial IPAs, they tend to go a little malty, and they tend to pour a little darker. See that looks great. See, these terms are so, there's so many breweries calling shit, and there's no like law of the land. You can call it whatever the fuck you want to call it. And it's like, I would say a good 3/4 of the Imperials I've had have been darker and maltier and really, like you said, Yaks, lower on the bitterness than what they claim to be. 89. No, they're usually in the 60s. And man, for an IPA lover, I tend to kind of steer clear of the Imperials because they are more malty and lose some of the stuff I like about IPAs. The bitterness, the floral, the citrus, the bright stuff. But it sounds like you may have found a diamond in the rough there, my friend, out of Wyoming of all places.
I know. And of course, their tagline for their brewery is, remember, if your beer is not madness, it's not beer. So I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen. I don't think it'll be a pigeon herpes, though.
As French brewmaster Jacques Pierre once said, every beer needs a moment of madness.
You know, boys, I actually, as Yax was describing his beer, I'm getting the underneath that pepper on the retro ale. Like I said, it's very consistent, medium strength white pepper on the retro ale. I'm getting a salty kind of mustiness that is what I recognized in the original M81. I think I'm no master blender by any means. I think that that might come from the Pennsylvania tobacco because I also get it from that green sucker leaf that's in the Neanderthal Pennsylvania tobacco and the Romocrafts Neanderthal cigar that on the back end of the retrohale in your nose, there's that kind of salty kind of mustiness. It's very distinct. And I'm going to guess that that's that Pennsylvania tobacco that's common in both black and cigars. But I'm going to give you this. Well, I'm still getting cedar and primary, really smooth leather on the draw. The finish, as I let the finish linger, if I don't take a sip, no tut. It's not marshmallow. I'm getting a little Yak Boy's graham cracker. There is a cookie kind of graham cracker sweetness on the
It's
finish.
part of the s'mores combo.
Maybe I'll get the marshmallow. Stay tuned, everybody. Hey, speaking of tasty cigars, oh, this is gonna be weird. You know who makes some damn well good ones, Tut?
Drew Estate.
Yeah, how'd you know? That's right.
Oh.
And Drew Estate has a stick out right now that y'all will definitely want to get your hands on. Not this one. Dark, bold. I was actually I was supposed to update the script to this one. I was like, can we wait one episode? Because it's gonna be really weird if I'm doing commercials for this cigar while I review the cigar. This is actually, as I read it, just as weird. Drew Estate has a stick out right now that y'all will definitely want to get your hands on. Dark, bold, and unapologetic. Blackened Cigars M81 by Drew Estate is an intense journey into uncharted, deepest, darkest, and heaviest depths of Maduro tobacco. A masterpiece collaboration between Tut's favorite metal frontman, Metallica's James Hetfield, Sweet Amber Distilling's Rob Dietrich, and Drew Estate's Jonathan Drew. The All Maduro Blackened Cigars M81 by Drew Estate is rich and powerful, but beautifully balanced. That's true. Offering tantalizing notes of leather, chocolate, and espresso that's perfect for both life's celebrations and times of reflection. It's so damn good, it will almost make you forget about the Black Album. Almost. Well, folks, it's time for the fire pit session of the show. Now's the portion where we do a roundtable wrap-up of some of the things we've all been viewing or reading recently so that maybe you at home get your interest piqued and check out some new stuff that maybe you weren't aware of or perhaps you were on the fence about soaking in. Doctor, I'm going to start with you. As you've recently taken a walk down memory lane, sort of, in that you've watched a few movies that are deeply entrenched in nostalgia. But did they offer anything new that's worthy of their cinematic predecessors? That, Doctor, is the million-dollar question. And I think it's safe to say it's not too soon to tell.
It is for once, Cade, it is actually, I can't even believe I'm saying this. The fissure might open up in the earth, but it is not too early to tell.
I think this might be a first. It's not too soon to tell. Doctor, I'm going to start. You recently checked out Indiana Jones and the Dildo of Destiny.
I did, yes.
The Dial of Destiny. Dial of Destiny. That
Dial.
was a movie I watched with my other
That's,
podcast.
we'll be discussing that tomorrow night.
I'll be discussing that on the Thursday night show. Doctor, what'd you think? I gotta admit, first two movies, classics. I will admit, I don't go back to Raiders Lost Ark and Temple of Doom very much. If I catch them on TV, I'll watch a little bit and it brings back happy, warm memories. I was not a big a fan of The Last Crusade as I know you three were, thought it was an equal, entry, a worthy entry into the original trilogy. The Crystal Skull, man, was just god awful. Unreasonably bad. And it certainly turned me off. And I kind of hope they would never dip their creative pens in the ink again, but they did. I mean, Harrison Ford's what, his 80s now?
Believe he has
Yes.
just turned 80. Yeah.
But I was surprised to learn, Doctor, that It was a step in the right direction and an improvement upon the Crystal Skull, right?
And that statement doesn't say a whole lot because I'm
it
with you.
Doesn't. I know it doesn't, but you actually got something out of it.
I did. I because of the crystal balls. Again, we'll be talking about that tomorrow. Because of that one, I still have the Disney Plus streaming service, and it's on there, so I didn't have to pay anything extra to watch it. And it had been there for a little while now, and I guess I did have some trepidation about watching it just because of how thoroughly I did not enjoy the last one. I do go back and watch the original three, you know, I mean, maybe even once a year. You know, I usually every summer as we get close, I usually do a trip through the Jaws franchise. But I do go back and watch those three with some regularity. So I actually, right before I went on vacation, I was actually kind of getting bothered pretty badly by allergies. It felt like I had a cold, but so it was a Sunday evening a few weeks back, and I decided to take the plunge on it. I enjoyed it. It's a fun movie. Nothing at this point I can watch it without making any kind of comparisons. And there's something to be said when we get into our film later tonight about that, you know, making a comparison between a movie now and a movie released in the 80s. But it was a fun movie. They did have a rather lengthy opening scene that's supposed to be taking place at the end of World War II in 1945. Yeah. And since the original three movies all took place in the late 30s, they do the, I guess, digital enhancing that you want to call it of Indiana Jones, making Harrison Ford from the 80-year-old guy he is. And we'll say this, for a guy who's 80, he looks very good. He does not look like an 80-year-old man. But they do the little digital making him like where he's, you know, about 40-ish or so.
It was better than De Niro's young De Niro in the Irishman.
Yes. It was substantially better. I don't know how they do those things. I don't know if it was just Harrison Ford's voice, I'm assuming, and they had a younger actor maybe doing the physical movements in that early part.
They have green – it's all mocap.
Okay. So they made that work, but they have that opening scene to sort of create the setup and the artifact that's going to be involved. And then it jumps ahead to – you can find out what year it is because the astronauts have supposedly returned from the moon landing. So that means it's 1969, which really would put him then at about 65 years old because he's also retiring. He's also retiring from a job. He's now teaching at a ancient history at a college in New York. And so you can kind of fix that from the timeline and the retirement that he's supposed to be about 65, which is really probably about what he looks. He really doesn't look like he's in decent shape. He doesn't look like a, I mean, there's guys who are 80 that can't walk. I mean, they hobble around. So,
he's definitely in good condition for his age. I'll give him that.
So I thought it was a good story. I thought it moved pretty well. I thought that, you know, they always kind of dip their toes, to use a phrase that Cade used earlier. They do all the movies kind of dip their toes a little bit into a supernatural element at some point, which is usually the weakest point. But they kept the story going pretty good. If there's any one fault that if you want to nitpick at, it's the fact that even if we're going to buy him as a guy in his mid-60s rather than 80, he's still really running and jumping in and off of moving cars and trains and all this kind of stuff. And at one point, he does make a comment, like he's climbing some wall with this young British chick that's like a daughter of an old contemporary of his. And he kind of stops and he makes some sort of comment. She's like, "Why have you stopped?" And he's like, he says some kind of comment like, "My shoulders are wrecked, my vertebrae are collapsing." He's like, I got a plate in my knee. He does kind of comment on it.
Well, no, I actually said those exact words to my kid as I hurt myself getting off the couch the other day. She's like, "Dad, what's wrong?" I was like, "Oh, my shoulders are shot. I got cracked ribs."
Can I comment, Mincy?
Please do.
No, but the thing is, she was like, oh, like, how'd you hurt yourself? I'm like, just now getting off the couch. That's how I recommend.
Overall, I do want to hear your input, Todd. I say overall, I enjoyed the movie. You know, don't go back and compare it to those flicks from the 80s. It definitely gets the Crystal Skulls taste out of your mouth. If you look at it as a standalone pick, standalone flick. So yeah, it was fun. It was a fun movie. I'd recommend it if you haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I want to agree with you on a lot of things. And the only thing that I would do is that, you know, you don't need Harrison Ford doing a lot of the action sequences. You know, first of all, it's laughable to try to pass him off as 65. I think he looks good for an 80-year-old, but I think he also looks like an 80-year-old too.
I disagree.
He walks like it. There's only one scene where he's actually shirtless and the dude looks good. I hope I look like that, you know, at 65 versus 85.
Yeah, he has an ab outline.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks good.
Yeah, Tut's a rough looking 65.
That's true. I just turned 50. The only thing that I mean, there's a lot of things that I could actually really go critical on, but I think it was a step in the right direction. It was a fun movie. It was definitely hands and shoulders above The Last Offering. The only thing that I can't forgive is that there's this one sequence where Indy is running across the top of the train as it's going across, and the CGI looks so bad. It looks like I did it. I put together that effect scene. I was just like, how can you be like this big budget dude? And then, you know, you throw that. I don't even know who did the effects on the scene, but that's really the only nitpicking thing. Well, I thought it was interesting seeing him in the 70s or the, you know, late 60s. I thought that was a cool.
Can I say this? As someone who hasn't seen the film, can I say that one, I'm glad to hear that they turned it around, and maybe I can't imagine they're going to do another one when he's in his 90s, but if Indiana Jones and the Colostomy Bag of Justice, but I will say this, I have noticed a change in Harrison Ford, the person. He went through one of those things that I certainly witnessed in my own life with my grandpa, where the guys get to a certain age and they just really get grouchy and really impatient with people and just real kind of bastards to be around. And for a lot of time, that was Harrison Ford's kind of thing in interviews and.
He always had a reputation as being grumpy, even when he was a younger guy.
Over the last couple years, that dude, if you watch him on a talk show or on things, the guy has lightened up. I think he's kind of at that he kind of turned a corner in his old age where he's making jokes about Star Wars, where before he wouldn't even really want to talk about Star Wars. He's making light of himself and his own kind of image. And I think a lot of that has, he has a younger kid, not younger, he's probably a teenager, but I mean, I think there's some things in his life that when you marry a younger, well, he's married to Ally McBeal, Calista Flockhart.
Yeah.
Who's still a very sexy, vibrant, she's about our age, I think. And,
She's old. She's way older than that.
Is she? Is she in her 50s, bro?
She might be 60 now.
No. There's no way. She looks great. But anyway, he's got a kid who's a teenager. He's got this younger wife. He just seems to be having more fun with his career, his legacy, and talking about it and doing things. And it sounds like maybe that aided this movie in that, you know, if you're going to be still be doing these movies at his age, you better at least be having fun.
I turned a corner on Harrison because, like, I was just like, I was in that camp. You know, Harrison was always grumpy and y'all pointed it out. And I started watching him. I'm like, dude, man, Han's kind of being a fucking asshole. And so I just kind of started brushing him off. But I turned the page on him in the Expendables outtakes, where there's this
Oh, I
one
forgot about
outtake
that.
where he was like, "You know who killed them? Me. I did that." And it was just this fun little
Yeah,
riff,
and Stallone
just a
said he was.
throwaway scene.
Stallone
And I
said he was.
loved it.
I forgot he was in that. Stallone says really fun that. I just looked up Dr. Calista. We're both right. Calista Flockhart's 59, so she's almost in her 60s. But she still looks dynamic. She was really good. She did a run on the old Supergirl series. Remember that, Yanks? Where she was the publisher of the Daily Planet, and she was so good in that. Yeah, she was so good in that. But anyway, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to watch it. I have Disney Plus, and other than fucking Bluey or whatever the hell my kid watches on there, we never get our money's worth. I'm not watching any of that Star Wars crap. So I will watch Indiana Jones and the Dildo of Destiny.
Dude, you have
take on it.
What, Tut?
You have to watch Ahsoka, man. It's the second best character in the entire franchise.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That Boba Fett series really rubbed me the wrong way.
Understandable. Understandable.
But then, get this. The doctor decided to go another. He shook the dice and was like, I'm going again. Indiana Jones paid off. I'm gonna roll the dice again. He didn't stay. And the other night on, I think it was streaming on his cable network, he watched Ghostbusters Afterbirth.
It's Afterlife.
Afterlife.
Afterlife. Sorry. And not the new one that's in theaters. I think that's Frozen Empire.
Yeah.
This one came out about 3 years ago, 2021, starring one of the kids from Stranger Things and Paul Rudd. And again, I don't think the doctor regretted watching it. Doctor, am I right?
That is correct. Kind of watched on a whim, just because, like you mentioned, I saw it was – I have, in addition to the multiple streaming services that I pay for and don't get my money's worth out of most of the time, other than Prime and Shudder, I have Spectrum Cable and saw that they occasionally have movies on there that are streaming. So I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife was there, and I took the plunge on that. I would I'll be honest, I never saw the Ghostbusters movie with the female Ghostbusters, the one that
terrible. Absolutely terrible.
I literally lasted less than 15 minutes.
I watched the whole thing. It was just and that's not sexist. It's not
I know.
It was just a bad movie. It was just a bad movie.
It was.
It did not follow the tone of any of the previous movies. They basically had tried to make it a musical. I was like, this is not, it's like watching like Ghostbusters cartoon. It's
and
not.
I love musicals and I love the Ghostbusters cartoon. No.
I actually am one of those people that while obviously the first one is a classic motion picture from the 80s, I actually got a kick out of the sequel from, I think, 89.
Nothing wrong with it.
Can't hold the first one, but I actually got a kick out of it. It has some good stuff in it. So this movie, Ghostbusters Afterlife, I also thought kind of similar to the description I gave with Indiana Jones. It was a fun flick. I enjoyed it. You know, Paul Rudd is one of those guys. I know he went and did the Ant-Man movies and probably made a bunch of money. I've never really seen him in anything. He's been in some bad flicks. I've never seen him where I disliked him. He's playing just a school teacher in the small town in Oklahoma. A quick setup. It's the main character. Well, one of the main characters is a single mom, and she's supposed to be the estranged daughter of Egon Spengler, the Harold Ramis, who has passed away in real life. So they kind of do a quick scene with a CGI double where they show him passing away because he's already been dead for several years. And then she moves with her two kids to this town in Oklahoma to this dilapidated farm that he owned. And then there's a, you know, without going into it, obviously there's a ghost story going on there in that town. And Rudd is the local high school teacher that befriends their family. It's a fun movie. You know, it had a good pace to it. There's some parts of it that are really slow burn. It's fun. If you're looking to see in Ghostbusters Afterlife, I don't know what the Frozen Empire one holds. If you're looking to see the remaining three surviving Ghostbusters of Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ernie Hudson, they are not in this movie very much. They're only in it for a couple of scenes towards the end. It's mostly, and that's not a spoiler. It really, I think you kind of get that if you watch a trailer.
Yeah.
It really doesn't include them very much. I still don't think this is a spoiler. I got to get it off my chest. I think I mentioned this to Cade. I'm going to be truthful about everything later on. I would be afraid of Conor McGregor. I don't think he's going to watch the movie and try to find my apartment or watch our show and try and find my apartment if I disagree with anything. And it turns out I don't have anything bad to say about him. I'm not worried if Bill Murray wants to come get some. I'm pretty sure I can take him. I like Bill Murray. I've mentioned it briefly to Cade when we were talking about this. Did he just look totally disinterested when he showed up? Man, he just, it was, I don't know if it was poor writing. I know that Murray is notorious for being a guy who ad-libs, and he knocked a game full of Grand Slams when he did that through the movie Kingpin, but that was almost 30 years ago. I don't know if he's ad-libbing or reading the lines. The scene with those guys is just bad.
It just didn't, yeah.
It doesn't work. They don't really need to be there. It's cool to see them and everything. They none of them really look bad for their age because they all got to be around 70.
Ernie looks great.
Ernie looks great. Good. It was cool to see them, but that was, I thought, the weakest part of the movie. And with Murray, it just looked like they were. I was reminded of the snippet I read once where prior to the latest Star Wars trilogy, that George Lucas apparently had lunch with Mark Hamill prior to The Force Awakens, like when it was in the early pre-development stages, or it was going to happen. It wasn't even in development. And apparently George Lucas said something to Mark Hamill like, you know, they're going to do this, because it was like Disney owned it and everything. It was like, this is going to happen. So it'd be cool if it happened with you, but basically it's going to happen anyway. I kind of feel like that was the conversation somebody had with Murray, like, hey, they're going to kick the tires with Ghostbusters again and restart it. You can boycott the thing if you want, but it's going to happen anyway, so you may as well take the seven-figure paycheck for 2 days worth of work. And it just seemed like that's the attitude that he had with it.
I think you're right, because I do remember him being very on the record that he wasn't interested in doing a Ghostbusters project.
The other one, it is a fun flick.
I was gonna say, I just felt like, you know, they could have utilized those actors differently in that movie. In other words, the way they used them, they didn't necessarily need to.
It seemed forced, right? Yeah, it's like it was almost like, well, let's put them in a scene where it just,
right. Know. And I felt that wasn't the scene for them. They didn't, I don't think they contributed.
Aykroyd as the shop owner, you know, the Ghostbusters are kind of, you know, debunked or whatever. You know, there wasn't a big call of it to where, you know, it kind of explains like why the Ghostbusters aren't prevalent. Like, where did all the ghosts go after New York?
What about this? I haven't seen the movie, but what about this? These kids are the grandchildren of Harold Ramis, who's deceased. What about a scene where they go and track down Dan Aykroyd and Murray and Hudson, and they agree to meet them maybe in the library from the first film, the Metropolitan Library, and they ask about, tell me about our grandfather. And there's like a heartfelt scene where it's just these three older guys telling about their time fighting ghosts. Like one scene, just to help these kids understand about who their grandfather was, and that's it. It's just, would that have felt
nice idea? The little girl calls Aykroyd in his shop, was Tuts referring to, and that just seems stilted. It just seemed that whole the dialogue there. We're going to talk about some dialogue later.
It seems like you could have had a really tender scene, because Ramis was such a loved figure by even people that don't love people, like Bill Murray, who's, you know, he's kind of a hard ass. seems like everybody kind of liked Harold Ramis, and maybe they could have a really warm little scene there with the grandkids and they get them out of there. They don't have to throw on the proton packs and all that shit.
I just felt like they utilized them. They could have done something. They could have helped in the scene, but they didn't need them in the middle.
Okay. Real quick, if I can jump back, there was something I wanted to say, and it came up again in this film. When you were talking about the de-aging technology that they used on Harrison Ford, Doctor, in the Indiana Jones film, and then you said they did something similar to Harold Ramis in this film.
Well, just a digital representation. They didn't de-age
him. Yeah. but they used CGI to recreate him, basically.
Yeah.
I just want to give a shout out to a director who is his early stuff I'm always in awe of, his later stuff, but you can't deny his early stuff, Ridley Scott. When he did the original director's cut of Blade Runner for DVD, he wanted to include a scene with Harrison Ford, who by then was obviously decades older than he was in Blade Runner. And it's a scene in a phone booth. I drink a lot. This could be wrong, but the gist of it is accurate. Where he's on the phone in a Chinese restaurant in the world of Blade Runner. And I believe it was the scene right before Joanna Cassidy gets shot through the glass, the replicant. He got, rather than try some ham-fisted CGI nonsense, he got Harrison Ford's 30-something-year-old son, who's never acted, who's shunned his, didn't have anything to do with show business, but looks a lot like Harrison Ford from like his first marriage. He got him to come in to use his profile in that scene. And then he because they'd actually shot the scene, I think, with Ford, but you couldn't see his face or his lips weren't right for the talking, what the dialogue they need to do. So he brought in Harrison Ford. This is in the early 2000s, I think. He brought in Ford's 30-year-old son and filmed him in this scene wearing Ford stuff and used his mouth because it looked like his dad. And I thought that was the most amazing at the time. I thought like, wow. And it looks great on film. And I was like,
yeah, but maybe not everybody has an offspring that looks like them that you can get on camera.
True. But I'd much prefer if that is an option. It was just such a cool way to do it, and much more so than take a fake AI thing of somebody's face and you know, kind of try to trick us. But anyway, yeah,
especially when you can't trick us. I mean, everybody knows that he's no longer here.
It's
a tiny part. You're right. I agree with you. It's a tiny part of Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'd say I enjoyed it. That's another one I would say to watch if you get a chance and just, you know.
If you're a fan of Ghostbusters, I agree with you.
Okay. Actually, I loved Ghostbusters growing up. I was a Ghostbuster for Halloween, and I cannot tell you the last time I fucking watched that movie. It might have been when I was a kid. I haven't gone back to that well in forever.
I will say this. There's a scene towards the very end, at the climax of it. Brought a little tear to my eye. I'm not going to lie. I kind of teared up at it. I thought it was good.
All right. Well, Tut, you're on the hot seat. You said that you recently watched the new Millie Bobby Brown Netflix movie, Damsel, 2024's Damsel, several times in a row. I'm guessing you weren't tuning into the dragons, you filthy pervert. Is dragon herpes a thing? Is there dragon herpes?
If it was, I'd probably have them.
Well, there's a dragon movie on Netflix starring the girl from Stranger Things, and Tut watched it for some reason.
I'm not going to apologize for my love of dragons. I love dragons. I'm a big D&D nerd.
But you also
so when
You also love Millie Bobby Brown.
I'm not gonna lie, I do. I really do.
Yeah.
So when Netflix puts a poster of a big dragon up there, I don't know anything about the movie, but I'm gonna go click. And I did. And then I was like, oh, that's a Stranger Things girl. And I like her. I think that she is growing into a special young actress. She has got control of her face. She has this ability to do like Gandolfini type micro gestures. That's really, really good. It really is. And I can't wait to see what she does as she grows older in her craft.
I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going to back you up on that. And just, I've only seen her in Stranger Things. But so much of her stuff, especially the flashback stuff with Michael Modine, the Papa stuff. Yeah, she does have a way of expressing things subtly, without words, that is uncommon for an actress her age, especially back then when she was a kid. Yeah. Dude, I'm going to give you that one. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I don't know where she picked it up. I don't know if it comes natural, but man, just keep doing it. I will say that she needs to, if she's going to do some fantasy action movies, she needs to learn how to swing an axe and a sword. Cause it's not believable. There's this one scene where she's chopping wood that I was just like, oh, dude, who taught you how to hold an axe? But, she does a really good job in it. The dragon's voiced by, I don't know the lady's name, but it's the main UN secretary from the Expanse. She's the old Indian lady that sounds like she's chain smoked for 23 years, and yes. It's really, really good. And she sounds perfect in the dragon. The story itself is kind of interesting. I mean, it was just a fun little flick. I mean, it wasn't great. It wasn't anything that I would say that you had to go rush out and see. But if you're a fan of fantasy type movies, you needed a little dragon slaying thing, you know, go check it out. Millie, like I said, Millie is actually turning into a nice little actress, and I can't wait to see what she does.
Well, that I can see. So the dragon talks with a human voice?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, it's much like Dragonheart, where you had Dennis Quaid as a knight and Sean Connery as the voice of a dragon.
Out of all the people in this video, don't question Yax and I about the voice of dragons.
I was just going to comment that I don't watch a lot of dragon stuff, and the idea of a dragon talking like with human words seems really stupid.
No.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie myself, but did the dragon have a name?
I don't know if they ever said it.
Or they just called it dragon.
No, dragon? No,
I think Doctor would agree with me here. Doctor, don't you think, like, because Game of Thrones, those big dragons, if they had stopped.
It's a different style, though. Yeah.
Get over here. Like, come on, that's crazy. That's stupid.
One possible exception, you have Brad Dourif doing it like he did Chucky. Like, you know, the dragon to life, and like, hey, it's a dragon, and he's all, fuck you.
Yeah, or the leprechaun, like,
where's me gold? Oh, I'm a dragon. Where's me?
Oh, wait, that's Conor McGregor in Roadhouse.
Speaking of which, where's me ice cubes?
By the way,
I'll be back in a shanty in a moment.
Well, dude, Doctor, take a break to get a fresh drink. And oh man, Tut is nubbing that son of a gun. Man, look at this. I've been pup, but I did start a little behind you guys. But man, I've still got a.
I've been nursing it. I wanted to keep it going as long as possible.
Tut, final thoughts.
Love it. It's my favorite cigar that we've done this year.
Really? You said that about the last cigar we did. This is better.
I really like this. I really like this. All the notes that it's hitting is right in my wheelhouse. Like I said, I always, like when I go into a cigar shop, I always like pick something familiar and then I always pick something new because I just want to explore. I just want to expand, you know, my knowledge. I just want to expand my taste. I want to try to develop my palate ever more. And it's funny because you always try to balance that line between just getting something that you enjoy to enjoy. But I just like the exploration. And so when something pops like this, it really reminds me of why I love cigars. I mean, it just, there's those moments to where it's just like, this is a great time with friends. This is a great time. You know, my week has been all kinds of shitty and I've got this cigar, I've got friends, I've got, you know, mediocre conversation and it just works.
Mediocre at best. Did you just say you like to expand your palate evermore? Did you throw an evermore in there? You've been watching too many.
Oh, he watched that dragon
He's
film.
been watching way too many fucking dragon movies. I just like to expand my cigar experiences evermore. Nobody talks
Verily
like
I
that.
say unto thee.
We got to start calling
Well
time.
then, sally forth and continue on your journey.
Well, thank you, Millie Bobby Tuttle, for the No, you know what? You're right. You're absent. Not that you need me to validate you, but I'm gonna join in with you there. There is something about going into a cigar shop like Smoker's Abbey in Austin, your local shop, grabbing something that you know what you're gonna get. But before you smoke that, tell your tobacconist what you're in the mood for, or just saying, surprise me.
I
And
always do.
tell me why, or tell me what this is going to be and why you're giving it to me. And it is fun. And it's not, it's hit or miss. You
Yeah.
know,
Well,
you're gonna get.
I'll tell you what's even more interesting is that Ian over his palate is a little bit different. But I love hearing, like you said, tell me why this, because I love hearing what he likes about it, and then I try it, and I try to see if it's there.
It is, and it makes it fun, and it gives you some when you set fire to that new cigar you never had. And I do it a lot out here in the Corner of Hope when I'm reviewing cigars. I just posted a review for a cigar that we were submitted, that new company, never heard of them, never, no backstory, no nothing. Don't they didn't tell me they won't reveal what's in the damn cigar, like the leaves used. It's fun. It's fun to light it up and spend an hour figuring it out. And even if you don't like it, you're forced to just think about it. And it's look, you mix in the other things Tuttle said, the booze and the friends and the conversation and everything. And yeah, man, there's nothing fucking like it. And that's why we keep doing it. Otherwise, you know, it's a lot of work. Why the fuck would we do it?
I'm sorry. Just you said you earlier. You said that tell me what this is and why you're giving it to me, and that's a conversation that took place on the last date I went on. I'm sorry.
Was that on the roof of your office with those fucking pigeons?
They had all flown the coop by then, literally and figuratively.
With letters attached to their necks?
You're responsible for those letters.
Hey, I wore gloves when I typed those out. Those can't be traced to me. Yaks, speaking of dragons, you mentioned to me you've been reading the comic series Black Dragon from Epic Comics in between your NCIS binge marathons. Tell us about that, not NCIS, the comic book.
So that was a I found it come across it. It's made back in 85. It was a 6-issue run. It was I got interested in it because it was so Epic was a smaller publishing company that Marvel had a hold of at the time. And they did a lot of actually really good things in that line. And a lot of those guys that did stories in the in for that. You know, they went on to do just like some, you know, a lot of the incredible stuff like Epic, you know, started out with a guy named Jim Starlin, who did he did a character named Dreadstar, which had a run in the early 80s. But Jim Starlin is the guy who went on to write the Infinity Gauntlet. He's the guy that gave us everything that, all the Marvel movies were about.
Yeah.
So, but no, the Black Dragon was just a short, is a quick 6 issues, but it was written by Chris Claremont, who at the time was and is most well known for his run on X-Men. He did 16 years from like 75 to 91. And so, and he's the one that basically changed how or what people were doing in comic books. And then from comic books, he's the one that made it, and why so many like TV shows changed too. He made it going from an issue by issue, fighting one bad guy every comic book to having a overarching story arc. They had their, 2 or 3 issues of fighting a bad guy, but behind it all, there was a whole long, and his, and the reason that Claremont became so famous for X-Men is because his story arcs would go years. I mean, it would take 30, 40 issues before he, gave you the answer. And
Yeah.
literally, it's like, if you've read comic books, you'll flip through and on that one panel, it'll say, see issue 123. And you're like, wait,
Oh, son of a
this is issue 357. God damn it. I gotta go, And he did that. I mean, so
he?
Black Dragon was just a, and it was just a, it was a, it was, wasn't really a, like a sword and sorcery type thing, but it was about a knight who ends up, having, is persecuted and because he has visions and which is of course about a calamity of a dragon coming to destroy everything. And so it was just sort of a side project. And of course, I mean, Claremont had gone on and he had written just X-Men wasn't his only thing, but it's what he was most well known for. But this was one of those where he just kind of got to stretch his proverbial wings to do something where he just had to, different, do something different. Wasn't superheroes. It wasn't,
And it was wrapped up in 6 issues.
yeah. And I like the story. It's, it's like I said, it's just this knight who's on this, who goes on a mission to try and stop this dragon from bringing calamity.
Was there any dragon herpes?
No, I don't think there was.
Did the dragon speak in an old Indian smoker woman's voice?
In my head, yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly, because it's a great voice for a dragon.
Well, that's
Well, that's
nice.
kind of why I
Great
was
voice.
asking about the name of the dragon because, Game of Thrones had like these, great dragon names. And of course, Lord of the Rings, Smaug.
What are you talking about? You don't need a fucking name for a dragon. That's not a smoker's Indian voice, but it's
Yeah,
kind
it's
of like
not a,
that. Well, my one of my favorite dragon movies, Dragon Slayer.
it's like an Eastern European, kind of mentally challenged voice.
Oh.
I thought it sounded like a backup, like a third tier backup character from The Sopranos. What are you talking about? You don't need
Hey.
Hey, Annie, what are you doing here?
Those are our trash routes, huh? Me personally, boys, to wrap up the fire pit, I've watched a couple of flicks since our last show, and I'm hesitant to even mention them, but there was the 2023 romantic comedy, Anyone But You, starring the usually entertaining Glenn Powell. He was in the show Scream Queens. He was, in the third Expendables film as the tech guy with the drone. And I think
Yeah.
he was a major player in that new Top Gun movie, Maverick,
Yeah.
which I did not see. And his co-star, the very easy to look at Sydney Sweeney.
Don't leave out Glenn Powell was in the Linklater Everybody Wants Some.
Oh yeah, we did Everybody Wants Some. He's one of the baseball player, college baseball players that we did that. All I can say on that one, is that it was like I was watching a movie made by people that had not only never made a movie before, but it was this, they'd never actually watched a movie before. It wasn't romantic. It wasn't funny. Everything in it was preposterous. It just sucked in every way, shape, or form. 30 minutes in, I was wishing all the characters contracted pigeon herpes and died. But then they'd have to change the name to anything but that. And it still wouldn't be grounded in any type of reality. It was terrible. So I'm not going to waste your time on that one. You folks at home, skip it. It's just awful. And the next thing I watched was the newly released comedy, not a romantic comedy, a comedy, Ricky Stenicki on Amazon Prime, starring John Cena, Zac Efron, and always
seen the posters, yeah.
And always enjoyable William H. Macy and some other people. It was directed by Peter Farrelly, one of the legendary Farrelly brothers. Doctor, you mentioned Kingpin earlier, Something About Mary, Dumb and Dumber. Oh my God. And while it had its laugh out loud moments for sure, I mean, some really funny laugh out loud moments, almost all courtesy of John Cena, who continues to impress me in everything I see him in. You know what? I am afraid of Conor McGregor. I'm not afraid of The Rock. As far as talent coming, cinematic talent coming out of WWE, John Cena is it. He is the gold standard. He is. Has done more diverse projects and killed it in comedies and action and everything. John Cena is,
I think he's underrated.
Sky's the limit with this dude. He's very popular. I don't think he's underrated. Everybody loves him, but
yeah, but I don't think they love John Cena movies.
Oh, perhaps, but he's really, really funny in this. Not like, oh, it's a big, giant, freakish, muscular dude. No, he's just, he has a natural talent for comedy.
I will enter you. Shut up, or I've.
But I got to say this, it was severely crippled, this movie, Ricky Stenicki, by the fact that the three main characters, the three main dudes in it that we're supposed to sympathize and root for were all major assholes. Like, they weren't just sort of unlikable. They were all total pricks. It was like I was watching a movie about you three guys.
Ouch. Thanks.
Oh, wait.
That was.
Oh, no. I wasn't supposed to say that. I wasn't supposed to say that out loud. Pretend like you didn't hear it.
We did hear it. I think you're hearing it.
No. The thing is, I'm going to give you the synopsis in 10 seconds. Growing up. Every time something, I was late for something or I didn't get somewhere that I was supposed to be with my girlfriend, I blamed Yak Boy, this guy with the glasses on in the four square. Oh, babe, Yak Boy came over or babe, Yak Boy had to do, my whole life has been blaming Yak Boy for stuff that wasn't his fault. The premise of this movie is these three dudes since high school have blamed, or no, I'm sorry, since elementary school have blamed everything they've ever done on their life on this Ricky Stenicki imaginary character. And they continue to use that as adults. They sneak away from their wives, like pregnant wives who are about to give birth. They go to Atlantic City to a concert and they're like, Ricky Stenicki has cancer. He needs us there in the hospital. Might be his last night. They're just pricks. They're just total selfish, self-absorbed dicks, and you don't want them to like have a happy ending. You don't like these guys, and it's partially the performer's fault because they just come across as complete, but it's also the writing, the directing. It's, you can't have a movie like this where you're not rooting for your main dudes, and the only one that comes out of this thing unscathed is Cena. As Ricky, they hire this Atlantic City stage performer to, because they have to save their ass at a certain point and present Ricky Stenicki to their wives because their wives are getting a little suspicious. He's so good, but that's all that's good about the movie. And William H. Macy is pretty damn funny too.
Yax, did you know or at least have any suspicion that every time Cade got in hot water with his wife all the way back to high school, that whenever something happened, like he showed up drunk or was hungover or missed, did you know that you were blamed for it?
Yes, I did know.
Yet she still really likes Yak
I was
Boy.
about to say, the amazing thing is that Yax is so likable. Everybody's like, oh, okay.
Well, that's why he was an easy thing to stick the tracking beacon on and use him in that way, because she's gonna like, it's Cody. It's Yak Boy. She's gonna be okay. So
I was
yeah,
bulletproof. I mean, just literally just getting hit left and right.
I would
Grenade. Couple
I
of
would
arrows. It's fine.
I
Completely
would
fine.
def I would definitely say, if you're sitting around drinking a couple beers, here's my review. If you're sitting around drinking a couple beers and you want some really good jizz jokes, watch Ricky Stenicki, because it'll give it to you. It's got classic Fairley Brothers just potty humor and dick humor, but don't expect it to be something about Mary or Kingpin level Fairley Brothers. It's not that. But yeah, so that's kind of what I've been up to. So let me say this. Well, I went into both of those films, that horrible rom-com and Ricky Stenicki, with an open mind, as I always, no matter what I watch, I always try to take a breath and give it a just a clean watch, regardless of the talent involved and the genre. After watching the trailer for tonight's movie we're about to talk about, which I rarely do, I rarely watch the trailer, but I couldn't resist the temptation a few months ago. It was really hard to keep an open mind, but I did my best tonight, unlike the filmmakers and everyone involved in 2024's Roadhouse. I did my best. They did not do theirs.
I wouldn't do it with an open mind. I think we kind of talked about that just in general, how in the past when we were younger, as remakes became more prevalent, which they've always been there. That's always been part of Hollywood. They remake movies. We talked about with Halloween with Rob Zombie and Indiana Jones, which you mentioned earlier. I never really took that whole "you pissed on my childhood by ruining something" kind of thing. So I got to a point, I developed an attitude that was so cynical that it bordered on hipsterism at some point, where I just thought that any big budget new movie, I'm just not going to like it. They just all suck. And what happened is that attitude, I didn't abandon it. It sort of transmogrified into having no expectations. And that's a good thing. Like, no good expectations, no bad expectations. I just have nothing, no expectations.
Yeah.
And that's a fair way. I think that's a fair way to see any movie. And I feel like I went into the Roadhouse with that.
I did.
I
I
did
did
not.
notice.
I'll just go ahead and say it, that the trailer was trash. I mean, there's nothing redeemable about the trailer. It was horrible. In fact, I pitched tonight's show as, I think I was drunk, so let me see if I got this right. Cade was like, "I'm not doing that." And I was like, "No, let's just do the show and then just trash on it.
Yeah.
It deserves to be trashed on." When I watched that trailer, I was just like, there's nothing redeemable about this. It is horrible garbage."
Yeah,
And
you're right.
that's how I went into it.
Interesting, Tut, because I watched the 2-minute trailer and I tell myself, you have to reserve judgment because you're just seeing 2 minutes. Now, granted, the trailer, they want to give you the hook.
They want to
So
give you the best things about it, and
it
then
should entice you, but I didn't. I just thought I kind of just went with, well, I'm not going to have expectations.
hey, real quick before we get into 2024's The Roadhouse,
Oh, because it's going to be good.
we didn't talk price point of cigar. You want to take a guess, huh?
Man, I have no clue.
It's a slow burning cigar, man. I'm still smoking it, and I started it forever ago.
Man, I don't know. I don't even remember what the original M80 is priced at. But I'd go, want to say
Or
1350, but that's my go-to for any cigar that I don't really know. But
like that you admit that.
yeah,
Just got 1350 in my back pocket. If I can't think anything, that's going to go out.
Six by 52 Toro Yak Boy. What's your guess?
Go 1350, man.
Go 1351.
All right, I'm going to go 1351.
I'm going to go. Let's see. You can't go over, right? I'm going to go.
It's 1984.
1050.
Oh.
1050 is a great price point for that cigar.
Hold on. That was my guess. Let me check my note. I did it again. 1050.
That's a great price point for that cigar. It really is.
Yeah, it's a great price point for that cigar. I'm digging it. I never got your marshmallow, but I certainly got a little graham kind of cookie on the finish. The cedar leather was highly enjoyable. The pepper with the little salty and must on the back end. Yeah, it's great. Great construction. Only had to relight once because I was yapping my jaws too much, but yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have to babysit it at all. It was
thumbs
great.
Up. Thumbs up on the shade of black. All right. Well, let's get down to brass tacks, boys.
Yeah.
2024's Roadhouse. The movie was written by some people that don't have a goddamn clue about writing screenplays and directed by a guy named Doug Liman, who should absolutely know better, as he's directed some actual real films and television over the years, such as Swingers, introducing Vince Vaughn to the world, Go, introducing Timothy Olyphant to the world, The Bourne Identity. Dude, he was executive producer and directed Doctor, one of our favorite series of the early, the OC. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, starring Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. Jumper, starring Bruce Willis. Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise. This guy's made some stuff.
Begging the question, how much directing did he actually do?
Well, for the first time in almost 10 years of doing this podcast, 165 episodes, I did not watch our featured film twice in order to take proper notes to help us navigate our way through the story and provide some structure for our legendary analytical discussion. And it's not because I was lazy. It's not because I got drunk or ran out of time or because I was busy consoling Tut over his outbreak of dragon herpes. It's because I just couldn't bring myself to sit down for another 2+ hours and give this piece of shit any more of my time. And keep in mind, I watched that goddamn John Travolta Gotti movie at least twice and that Bruce Willis space movie at least 2 or 3 times for this show. That should tell you something. I go hard and I go all the way.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to go even with Gotti. I mean, you had Travolta giving you something. It might not have been a good something, but Travolta, no matter what he does, gives you his all, and you got to respect Travolta. It's okay to watch that more than once to see Travolta and what he's trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody was trying, and I respected that, and I watched it again. Nobody was trying.
Yeah, but, all right.
Nobody was trying in this fucking movie.
I disagree.
We'll get there. Okay. So what we're about to take you through is my just 2 weeks later kind of, I'm going to get you through it the best I can, remembering it. And I guarantee you it'll give you ample time for all you boys to jump in with whatever you want to.
Fair enough. I'll just say, structurally, feel free to lean on me because I watched it last night. So,
okay.
And as
it's fresh,
as real life events, morality and the human race continues to disintegrate, I've grown more philosophical. So I think that everything I'm going to say, I'm probably going to repeat this phrase. Everything I'm going to say positive or negative, is within the contextual vacuum of this film. It is within this context and without not comparing it to anything else. So
gotcha.
Just because I watched it last night, feel free to lean on me.
And I appreciate you being philosophical, because you know what? Dalton in the original film was philosophical, and that
philosophy
is
major at NYU.
That's certainly missing from the new Dalton.
But how could you separate it from the project? It's literally Roadhouse. You have to compare it to the original Roadhouse.
Oh, you know, you
that's
do.
You
do, and that's what that's
to an extent. You do.
The interesting thing to I think with
my neighbors are listening to me screaming and here going, God, they're at it again.
Well, hold on, because this doesn't get into anything, Kay, that you're about to go into.
No,
this
it doesn't.
A general point.
If you watch this film without there being an original Roadhouse, it wouldn't have a fucking leg to stand on as a film on its own.
And just as a general point, without having to do with Roadhouse at all, we talked about this a little bit earlier with some other stuff. As a general point with films, you would not compare a movie from 1989, which is when Roadhouse was released, to a movie 35 years earlier from 1954. A little bit, sure, you would say, but you would appreciate the fact that this is a totally different time frame. Writers were trained differently. Directors were trained differently. Actors were trained differently. It's an entirely different time frame. So, yes, it's a remake of a film. So you're going to have a basic comparison. Wow. But at the same point, there is a 35-year difference there. So you still, I think, have to look at that film. Like I said, I'm going to use that over again, within its own context. So,
but sure. But there's a lot of those 80s films. Like when I was first aware that a lot of the movies actually had movies that were in the 50s, and then I watched that, you could still see the connection, the heart, the intent within those things. And I'm not sure that you can see that connection here.
What I want to say, and then Cade needs to we need to let our showrunner do his part.
It's a free for all. I'm like Conor McGregor. I'm bringing the chaos.
I gotta run the show.
I just want to say I think Cade and I are probably in agreement on this. And it's getting the little Spidey sense going off that just taking this movie again, or to use it three times. Just taking this movie within its own context,
yeah.
You don't need to go to any comparison thing negatively or positively if you can. It's just as its own standalone in a vacuum film, you can judge it on those on that as that.
It can, and I will. I did my best watching it to do that. I will reference the original film, somewhat in our discussion, but that time frame, that 30 something years gap that you mentioned, Doctor, I hadn't thought about that. When you look at John Carpenter's The Thing in relation to it's a remake of Howard Hawks, The Thing from Another Planet.
Right.
Did I get that title right? Which was about 30 years, maybe? About the same gap?
Yeah, in the 1950s.
And you took a movie and you expanded on it. You used the modern tools you had available to make it better in every single fucking way. You're like, man, I bet Hawks wish he had Rob Bottin as a special effects guy. I wish he had Kurt Russell as you know, a dependable, trustworthy lead actor. I bet he would. I've got these things, and I'm going to show my cinematic idol, who's dead by then, obviously, but I'm going to show him, you know, I'm going to take this movie I loved and transform it into something that modern audiences can, and now granted, they hated it at the time. It was the year of E.T. They like cute, cuddly aliens. They didn't like fucking spider legs coming out of human heads and dogs with fucking worms coming out of their stomachs. Over time, though, he was right. It's a classic now. But let me get started and let's see how this goes. I'm going to use quotes here. Movie starts off at an underground, unsanctioned fight club where musician Post Malone is the undefeated champion brawler. But when he sees Dalton walk through the door, originally played by Patrick Swayze, now played by Jake Gyllenhaal, when Gyllenhaal takes his shirt off, Post Malone quickly forfeits the fight and runs away scared. Only Dalton wasn't planning on fighting at all. He's such a notorious badass that he only has to show up, flex his abs, and his opponents then refuse to fight him, which results in him taking home the prize purse without breaking a sweat. Question. Why cast Post Malone, a very popular celebrity, to play this role when any ripped, tough-looking tattooed dude would suffice just fine? Who fucking knows, as it results in the audience immediately checking out, I think like I did, a few minutes into the story being told. It's just the first of hundreds, maybe thousands of dumb decisions on display here. Hey, I want to remake The Shining, but instead of those two creepy little girl ghost twins in the hallway, I want to cast the Fat Boys. And they're going to be standing in that hallway when the little kid rides his big wheel down there.
I got to tell you, I kind of like that idea.
somebody, a producer or someone would be like, Cade, that's going to take people out of the film and it's not good for the story. So maybe,
love it.
Maybe casting one of the top five music celebrities in the world as a pit fighter, who, by the way, doesn't have an ounce of muscle on his, he's got a pot belly and he's just, why?
I know.
Doctor, you know.
Yeah. It's, we talked about this earlier with, it's a marketing hook. It's not.
Are you saying that it was a collab?
No, it's
like Hetfield and the cigars.
Thought there's a book you need to read called If Then, written by a Harvard professor, Jill Lepore, or Lepore, however you pronounce her name. It's basically about how a company, Simulmatics, invented the times that we live in today. So, and how every presidential campaign since Adlai Stevenson's in 1952 has been run by an ad agency. It's true. It's not cynicism or any.
As a marketing student, I understand this.
Start your movie and it's like, oh, Post Malone's afraid to fight this guy. Of course he is. He's not a fighter. He's a musician.
I'm just going to say this. For some reason, Post Malone worked for me. I thought it was funny. There was there's no ounce on it, but there is something zany about it that I just fucking liked. And I'm sorry, but when he was throwing punches, he looked like he could throw a punch. Someone trained him the fight choreography. And I'm sorry, I don't care what y'all say about this movie. You want to sit there and say, you know, it's a total bunch of garbage, and you can't, because whoever the fight choreography is put their fucking heart into it, and it showed on some of these fight sequences. This is some of some really cool, crazy fight sequences going out there. Even though it's a fighting style I don't like. I understand that it's a whole UFC theme throughout the entire movie. I much rather prefer the Aikido to the original one. But I'm sorry, the fight scene and the fight choreography on this was top-notch, and I don't know why, but Post Malone just made me giggle, and I liked it.
To backtrack to Cade's initial question of why, the answer goes back to the book I read, If Then. If we put Post Malone in it, and if we put Conor McGregor in it, then we will get more viewers from the younger generation.
It's but I don't even know. I don't. Did they even market it as Post Malone in there?
No, and they didn't have to, because right from this scene, there was literally no context, because we only have the context from later here when the lady who owns, quote unquote, the Roadhouse, she's looking for a tough guy to
to beat crack some skulls to clean up the town or whatever. She's the only context we have for Malone's character of he's a badass. Well, all I saw was like some two dudes hitting at each other that didn't look like any sort of fighting. Okay. They just looked like two guys with their fists wrapped, just wailing on each other. In other words, you say it's choreographed, but I mean, I could have gotten two hobos to do that.
Yes, people have gotten hobos to do that and put it on YouTube. But Tut loves the choreography.
We're going to have to let Cade continue, or we're going to be talking about this movie till 4 a.m, and I just can't do that.
Hey, we're only in the first 2 minutes, and there's 2 hours. Oh.
You see, boys, it's revealed in flashbacks that as a UFC fighter, Dalton pummeled his best friend in the ring until he killed the guy. Why? We never find out, other than he kind of mentions to someone when he gets in the zone, he just can't stop, or something like that. We never learn who the friend was. What's Dalton been doing since? Nothing. This entire movie, we never learn a single goddamn substantial thing about Dalton. And when your lead actor is as charismatic as a fig pizza, that's a real problem.
That is one, I like big pizzas. And two, we never knew the backstory of the original Dalton.
Oh, you sure as fuck. You sure as fuck did know the original Dalton. You knew something happened. You knew that this guy lived his whole life as a fucking bouncer, just like his buddy Wade Garrett. They lived in that world. You knew so much about.
He's a bouncer that had something bad happen.
Look. There are some things in life that I'll never understand, things that I'll never be able to grasp or comprehend no matter how hard I try. Geometry, the popularity of that Big Bang Theory TV show, Weed Ales, and how the fuck Jake Gyllenhaal became a movie star. And this movie,
Donnie Darko.
This movie solidified it. This guy... If you're going to have a movie where you don't tell us anything about the lead character and it's all innuendo and just not even innuendo, it's nothing. We're given nothing about this dude. He's not the guy.
He has no charm. He has no charisma. He has no humor. He has no angst. And despite the fact that the script is so bad that I think I made the analogy, and I have several for this movie, that now that the baseball season has started, every actor in this movie is coming up to the plate with two strikes on them. And you have to take that into account. He does get, out of every person in this movie, he's the lead actor. He gets the most opportunity to do something. And he's not going to overcome the script. The script is atrocious, but he gives you nothing. And I think the other analogy I had real quick was it reminded me of an anecdote from the 1962 film Mutiny on the Bounty with Marlon Brando and Richard Harris, where Richard Harris, said that, you know, at that point, Brando had become megalomaniacal and was a dickhead and wouldn't even read lines with Richard Harris. And so when he had to do his scenes, rather than being able to read lines, you know, Brando's off camera and it's on Harris, rather than be able to read his lines with Brando, he read his lines with a piece of driftwood that they found on the beach. That's what he looked at while he did his lines. Jake Gyllenhaal is a piece of driftwood in this movie. He gives you nothing. It's a bad script, and no one's going to overcome how bad the writing was in this movie. And you do have to give a little bit of an excuse for everybody because of how bad the screenplay is. But he is a piece of driftwood. He gives you nothing. It is awful. I am in total agreement with Cade. I don't understand his career. If I've missed some film that I need to go see, not Donnie Darko, Tut. I saw that. He was a young guy. He was like 20 years old. If there's something in the last 10 years that I've missed, let me know. He is driftwood. He is nothing. He gives you nothing.
Actually, Doctor, I, in my little where I have this little group of trees in my front yard. We have a piece of driftwood out in there, and it actually has more charisma and charm than Jake Gyllenhaal.
That has a little personality. Yeah. He's got no personality. He's got nothing.
No.
And he has every opportunity. He has opportunities, even with this bad script, to show some charm, to show some humor, to the whole, what is there a hospital nearby? That whole god-awful scene. The writing is bad. The writing is piss. But he has scenes where he could give you something, and he gives you nothing.
Less than nothing.
Cody, would you like to pile on?
He just has this dumb.
Yes, I would like to pile on.
For a guy that's suffering trauma of killing his best friend, he just kind of has this little doofus grin on his face the whole time. And I mean, he kind of comes across, I'm sorry, as kind of special. Not in a good way.
Yes, that's exactly where I was going to go. He feels like he's dissociative in his own world. He's just, people come up and offer him stuff. Okay, I'll do that. He's just, what are you I doing?
He's just, unlike Dalton, he's just the original Dalton. He's just hanging around.
Noodling, just kicking.
He's just kicking. He's just kicking it. It's fine. He's fine. He doesn't seem sad. He doesn't seem happy. He's just
going to get out. I want y'all to get all of this out.
How do you overcome your lead actor being driftwood? I mean,
let me go a little bit further. Let me go a little bit further than this, and we'll give Todd maybe as I go through the story, he'll be like, that's when it clicked for me.
No, because it's, there's not anything in the movie. Go ahead, Dex.
Well, okay, as we go past the beginning and as we progress in, it really dawned on me where, obviously, yes, a good amount of time has passed between the original and this. And yes, as we have, stated, there have remakes have always gone on, all that, but to literally take away from your character, your central character, i.e. that, we know from the original that they followed the old West trope of the quote unquote kind of, the man with no name, the drifter, the so on. And that's what we were getting, i.e. he's a single name. He's Dalton. Not Shane, but Dalton.
Is Dalton.
And all the other stuff. And sure, they give you some snippets about him. We hear some whispers and.
No. That's generous.
All right. So
he killed his best friend in the ring. He can't explain why.
All right. Well, first of all,
in the zone.
I'm just talking about Gyllenhaal, the actor here. You can't excuse the script. The script is unpassable in any shape or form. It is. I just. It's almost like they paid the script writer $15 and they got a $15 script. I mean, it's just the script is horrible. And that's not to excuse. That's not as a crutch or an excuse for anything that I'm about to say. First of all, Gyllenhaal is no Swayze. And I mean, I don't know whether Gyllenhaal can carry an entire feature film as he's asked to do in this. But I will say this, there is an odd energy to Gyllenhaal or Gyllenhaal. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it. There is a weird in every movie.
No. Let's get back to the context. In this movie,
there is an odd energy to him.
In the Roadhouse, you see an odd energy to Gyllenhaal in this movie.
There is an odd energy. It is weird.
More proper 12, goddammit.
It's hard to explain. He's not charismatic as your leading man. He's it's
possible
not,
to explain.
You ever watch Trailer Park Boys? Do you know who Bubbles is?
I'm just saying there is.
He has charisma.
Bubbles has charisma. Bubbles is special with charisma. Gyllenhaal is just a blank slate of nothingness.
I disagree. There is this thing there with Gyllenhaal.
Okay.
It's hard to explain, but there's energy into there.
Yeah,
and
okay.
I will say this, you sit there and talk about driftwood. A driftwood is not going to shred down to 1% body fat.
Oh, dude, now you could just cast any fashion model in the role and you're like, hey, those abs. That is
no,
not.
You can't, because there has been so many films that we have done on this podcast,
dude,
where the actors do not give a fucking shit
he
whatsoever
already
about
had
the project.
Those...
I guarantee you, Gyllenhaal gave a shit about this.
He
project.
Already had those fucking abs. He was in a boxer movie a few years ago and was shredded. It's not like
his physical shape has nothing to do with his performance.
I'm just saying that. No, I think there is. Like when Stallone fattened up for Copland, everybody was writing about it. I'm just saying that. I'm just saying that it is. To sit there and say that Gyllenhaal didn't give a crap, he was just taking a check.
The fact that you would reference that fucking pandering piece of shit Copland, which was only
that pandering piece of shit made headlines. It was fucking written
it
about.
Only
I didn't say he didn't give a shit.
The only reason people talk about Copland is because Stallone got fat. Stallone ate some donuts, that's why we talk about that movie.
And I didn't say Jake Gyllenhaal didn't give a shit. I didn't say he didn't care, and that's why he's bad. I'm saying he's just bad. I'm not saying he was like, oh,
no, I'm not saying he didn't try. I'm saying he's not a good actor, and he tried and it failed.
I'm just saying there's an odd energy, and if you can fucking capture it, the dude works.
Okay.
Not in this film.
That may be, but it's not here.
Did
the director,
you say
John Greenwriter? None of these guys.
That, but I'm gonna die on the hill.
Cut. Did you just say he has a weird energy that works not in this film, but it works?
Yeah.
So you just said it doesn't work in this film.
See, okay, for the fifth time, the context is this movie.
I've been listening to y'all say that he is uncharismatic and he's driftwood, and I'm going to defend.
So you
Gyllenhaal.
Liked him. You liked him in Brokeback Mountain, but it didn't.
I've never seen that movie.
Yeah, sure you haven't.
Okay, when I call him driftwood, I am talking about Roadhouse. I don't even think I've seen him in. If he is in another movie in the last 10 years that someone's going to go, hey, man, you need to see this movie because Jake Gyllenhaal's great in it. I'm gonna take your word for that, and I'll go give that a shot. I don't think
there's anybody that's ever said that about this dude.
Okay, so I'm talking about this flick here. When I say Jake Gyllenhaal is driftwood, I'm talking about The Roadhouse. I'm talking about the movie for our podcast. Something else. I wouldn't know. In this, he is a... has no totally devoid of personality and it's a fucking log.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like I would be interested to actually peruse the script simply to see if there was anything before they started doing that would like, is this the way this character is supposed to be? Or is this just what he did? Or is this what the director said? Here's what I want out of you.
Yeah, maybe he's had so many concussions. In UFC, he's got that CTE thing, brain thing, and he just can't really function like a normal human. That would make sense.
Yes.
I actually think what Yax just said is the $25 million question about this entire movie. I'm inclined to think that every actor from Jake Driftwood to Conor McGregor to everybody else that's in the movie, I'm going to go out on a limb here, Cade. You have written screenplays. You have directed a couple of feature films. I'm going to go out on a limb here and just guess. The actors did not write their own scenes.
No, they did not.
Did not write their own lines. So, but that's what you actually alluded to. That to me is the big question there is.
If I was directing 2024's Roadhouse, which I would never for any amount of money do with this script.
It doesn't need to be made.
And the first day of shooting, I looked at the dailies and I looked at what Jake Gyllenhaal was doing. I would have tried to fix it. And I think
you know, it's just taking the check.
I think it's unfixable. But let me can I get us into the goddamn movie?
Yeah.
We're not in the movie yet?
Enough about this
fucking movie. I thought we were.
I just didn't want y'all to sit there shitting all over my boy Gyllenhaal.
Look,
you literally said 2 minutes ago that he doesn't work in this movie.
Fake news.
I mean, you said it and we heard it. But okay, that's how America works nowadays, so okay. So a chick, after the bar fight with Post Malone, offers Dalton $5,000 a week to come be a bouncer at her small-town bar, the Roadhouse. That's the name of the bar, the Roadhouse, in Florida, even though he seemingly, unlike Patrick Swayze's Dalton, has never been a bouncer before and has zero knowledge of the bar industry. You know, the very things that resulted in the original film's premise making sense on a basic level. This guy just knows how to smile like a doofus and snap wrists like an in-shape Steven Seagal, which we haven't seen in a while. I'll give him that. After getting off the bus, Dalton's first stop is at a small independent bookstore. This town has like a convenience store and three shops. One is a independent bookstore owned by an African-American widower, aw, and his wise, sassy teenage daughter. She likes Dalton because he's the only person to ever walk into their store, like ever.
I love her. I'm sorry.
And her character is super important to 2024's Roadhouse because this Dalton, unlike Swayze, is not wise, worldly, or philosophical in the slightest. So the hack screenwriters thought, hey, we need this teenager to have those characteristics so that Dalton looks smarter by proxy. In other words, just by being around this teenage girl occasionally, maybe Dalton won't seem like the vapid total plank that he is. It is the total fucking perfect example of super cheesy pandering at its worst in a screenwriting. And I resented those screenwriters. So I'm like, oh, you're going to put a teenage African-American poetic teenage girl who likes Dalton to get us to be like, oh, he goes into their store. They like, are you fucking kidding me? Fuck you. Fuck you for trying to make me think that, oh, he's a sensitive soul. He goes into a bookstore. Fucking the original Dalton fucking wrote books in his head that he never published. This dude, he goes into a bookstore. He doesn't even pick up a book.
He picked up a pamphlet about a tree. Come on.
Yeah, he picked up a pamphlet like, oh, is this something about something? She's like, yeah, it is something about something. Oh, cool. I like stuff about something. Are you kidding me? This is
so literally the script for the movie.
This is the worst screenwriting I have in 165 episodes. I have never sat through something written with this low level of respect for the audience. Hey, our main character, he's not very smart and boy, now that we're looking at it, he looks like a total doofus. Hey, what if we have an African American teenager that runs a small independent bookstore in a town that would never support such a business? And she likes him, and that way we'll think he's smarter. Fuck you. Never make another movie. You should go to movie jail. A life sentence. Never make another movie. Fuck you.
That said, I did like the actress. I did like her delivery. That was fine.
Yeah, you know, she
you know what? No, here's the thing. Here's what I'm going to say. We're moving on from Jake. I've said what I'm going to say about the actress playing Frankie, and is the girl, is her name Charlie? I think that's the bookstore. Doesn't matter. I'm gonna say this. Them, I give the benefit of the doubt. Their characters were bad. I like nothing about their characters. I like nothing about what they do. They're just bad, but they're not in it a lot. And I will say that that's a situation. Them and his love interest, who we haven't introduced yet, but Kate's talked about Frankie, who owns the Roadhouse, and this girl in the bookstore. On them, I'll go back to my analogy of, you came up to the plate and we already said you got two strikes on you. You're an 0-2 hole. Like, man, that's not fair. You know, it's like, hey, there's some hitters can get hit with two strikes. Some can't.
This is
like an incomplete grade. We can't pass you. We can't fail you.
Dalton steps off the bus. This is a 5-building town. They got the Roadhouse, a hotel, a convenience store. Oh, and a quirky little independent bookstore owned by a quirky. That would never happen in the
real. You're right. I agree with you completely. The writing's, I'm just saying, I'm talking about the two actresses that play the owner of the Roadhouse and the teenage girl. I'm going to say you get a free pass. You proved nothing. You didn't prove you can act. You didn't prove that you can't. We're just going to have to see you in something else. I give them not good. I like nothing about them.
I'm okay. Doc,
I give them pass.
Doctor, I'm okay with the pass on those two. I'm okay with the pass. The Roadhouse itself is an open bar on the beach where rando troublemakers stroll in daily and just start knocking over people's beer bottles and pushing over chairs, because that's a thing. I don't even think that's a thing in Florida, but it's a thing in this movie.
A grown man, I'm just going to snap some pool cues.
Dude, there's never more than 10 customers in this bar. And once a day, these guys stroll in and just destroy the place. How is she fucking paying, one, that band that's always behind the cage, and how is she paying Dalton $5,000 a week when she's selling – I don't know, a couple Bud Lights and a couple daiquiris to her regulars.
That's a script thing. It's a script thing. You got to move on.
Dude, she's
at
like,
at least in the original,
it was
our
busy.
Guy fixing up the Roadhouse literally did come and say, I came into some money.
Yeah.
They solved it with the sentence. She could have said the same thing.
Dude,
that's called smart writing.
The double
fixing the problem.
Did you not notice
these
that the
writers
band
can't do that?
The band was the Doc and Tuttle Experience.
Yaks, what was the original bar? The Double Deuce?
Double Deuce.
Pretty good.
It was busy. They were making money. There's never more than 10 people in this bar.
No. It was even as a dive. There was still 50, 60 people in there at every single time. So you're sitting there going, okay, they're making something. He's making something. But he also did imply that he wanted to make more money and that he had come into some money, and now he wants to fix it up.
$5,000 a week for a dude with no experience bouncing. I want to pay you $5,000 a week to come in and break my customers' arms. The local cops are bought and paid for. The bar owner chick doesn't know how to look up the phone number for the FBI, which would solve her problems fairly quickly. So Dalton, who doesn't want to fight anymore because of the trauma of killing his best friend, which we barely get into, just starts fighting people happily, and he seems to be having fun while doing it, cracking jokes and always smiling like a freshly turned 21-year-old at a titty bar. Hey, speaking of titty bars, which are inarguably awesome, if you were listening to me earlier, you'd know about the newly released tubular-shaped bits of awesomeness that were recently unleashed by our good friends over at Drew State. Dark Bolton, Unapologetic. Blackened Cigars M81 by Drew State is an intense journey into the uncharted, deepest, darkest, heaviest depths of Maduro tobacco. A masterpiece collaboration between Metallica's James Hetfield, Sweet Amber Distilling's Rob Dietrich, and Drew State's own Jonathan Drew. The All Maduro Blackened Cigars M81 by Drew State is a rich and powerful but beautifully balanced offering tantalizing notes of leather, chocolate, and espresso that's perfect for both of life's celebrations and time reflection. All right, let me ask you this real quick. I got the leather in tonight's Shade Cigar.
Yes. Which is
similar to the leather in the original M81. How do you feel as far as tonight's Shade to Black smoke fitting in with the Blackened brand of cigars? In my recent written review of the Blackened M81 over on the TNCC website, I noted a well-balanced flavor profile, black pepper spice. This one tones that down a little bit with the Connecticut wrapper. Leather, coffee. I got no coffee coming in this one. It's a little more woodsy, a little more cedary, but I got that salty kind of mustiness on the back end of the rail, which makes me think that the Shade to Black, it is kind of a sister cigar to the M81.
Well, yeah, I would definitely say that, but I would also say that, you know, in terms of like, I guess, if you were going to say like, you know, your theme, if you're going with the songs, I mean, like you name a cigar Blackened, like the song from Metallica, just like you took this cigar and said, you know, let's Fade to Black. We'll call it Shade to Black, but it's still strong. It still has, you know, some good solid flavors in there. But yes,
Shade to Black was kind of their first ballad.
Right.
And this is certainly a softer entry into the Blackened line. I think they do make sense as kind of.
I mean, you know, in Metallica and like so many bands at the time, they had such wonderful sort of these kind of low key openings to their songs. And then it would ramp up and they would lay in those first hard riffs. But Blackened was one of those where it didn't really have like something. It was just a build up to slamming it down. Fade to Black really, they felt like they were playing an intro.
Yeah.
I mean,
I can see the cigars fitting in the same brand. There's an evil land developer who wants to obtain the Roadhouse's property for his new condos or something. And with Dalton and his abs now standing in his way, he's forced to fly in butt-ass naked UFC legend Conor McGregor, a.k.a. Knox, to escalate both the pressure on the bar and the violence to extreme levels.
And at this point in the movie, this is when it all, for me, it made absolute sense. Now I understood the context of where I needed to be. What world was I in? What was the universe that I was in, so to speak?
Okay.
This is like someone said, I'm gonna make a Roadhouse movie. I'm gonna remake Roadhouse. Except in this instance, this Roadhouse now exists in the world of the Fast and the Furious. Physics makes no sense. Characters make, you know, people's intel, you know, it goes out there. That's where this Roadhouse is. Fast and the Furious. If you saw Vin Diesel and his group drive past this place, it would have made perfect sense to me at this point.
Agreed.
As soon as they had introduced the character that McGregor played, the way they introduced him, it all made sense. I'm just like, this is it.
Well, they introduced him.
If people disagree, that's on them. That's the universe that this movie exists in now.
They introduce him where he gets a phone call to come to the Florida and take care of things. And he's butt-ass naked walking through this little village in Italy or somewhere. And we see him just with his naked butt cheeks just going around, just tormenting this little town. The guy's a force of nature, criminal nature. And I want to give Doctor real quick, because the one thing the doctor said to me off the record, not off the record, but pre-show, was that McGregor's performance was the one thing that the one maybe positive thing he took away from the movie. And my response to that was, you know, when you've had diarrhea for like 2 or 3 days, and then you sit on the pot and a solid turd comes out and you're like, oh man, that's good. It is good, but it's still shit. He's the least terrible thing in a terrible movie, but he's still terrible.
It goes back to, I like that analogy. It goes back to the caveat I've been using within this context, which means what exactly? It means this horrible script that we've been talking about, the terrible writing, the fact that the lead actor is Driftwood. When you take that in, and the fact that Conor McGregor did not write his own lines.
No, he did not.
He probably
was not an actor either.
I'll make an assumption that they probably wrote the whoever wrote this atrocity probably. I'm thinking that they probably had planned to have him in the movie from the get-go. They certainly planned to have a UFC fighter to play that role. I'm thinking they probably wrote it with him in mind. So, and again, at the risk of being accused of afraid of having Conor McGregor coming after me personally, I think he has too many bigger things in his life to do. So the fact that I like his whiskey and so forth, I just feel within this context, he gave you something. So it's cartoonish, it's comical, it's over the top, but he, where your lead actor has no personality, he gave a personality. He did give, in Tut's words, you talked about an odd energy. He has an energy. He has a personality.
You never go full leprechaun. Never go full leprechaun.
It was as if someone said, hey, imagine if you're wearing a leprechaun costume, even when you're butt naked, and you have to walk like that. Like you're wearing your clothes.
I like Yax's deal of this movie now takes place in the Fast and the Furious. And I was against Conor McGregor's. Now I was getting ready, or before Yax said that, I would have disputed you, Miss Mincy. But given that this movie now takes place in the Fast and the Furious, he is a perfect character for it.
Yeah, but that's just something Yak said. It doesn't actually exist in the Fast and Furious world.
In my mind, it does now.
I picked the Fresh Kicks beer because I had hoped that at least with the new Roadhouse movie, we'd get some fresh Roundhouse kicks. After the movie was over, I said to my wife, I don't think we got one Roundhouse kick in this whole damn movie.
No, and she's, no Roundhouse.
And she was like,
Roundhouse is the 80s, man.
And she was like, well, I think maybe Conor McGregor did one. And I was like, I don't think so. He was too busy granting everybody three wishes. Dude, it was literally one step away from don't fuck with my pot of gold. It was that stereotypical bad Irish shit. It was terrible.
But
I saw no, but real quick, so he doesn't kick my ass. It had promise. He showed some promise on screen.
I hate this camera because it's showing the fucking veins in my head as I'm laughing so hard.
With your diarrhea to solid good turd analogy, I think you're agreeing with me in that, again, within this movie's context, he actually provides you with something that the character of Knox, as ridiculous as that character is, as ridiculous as that character is written, he actually gives you whatever you want to call it. There is an energy, there is a personality to that character. As
yeah, you know what that energy is? It's someone saying, "Oh shit, I'm on a movie set. I get to be in a movie."
Well, I get. Jake Gyllenhaal didn't do that.
It is.
Okay. And
Jake
so we
understand. Did not have that energy, but Colin McGregor was very excited to be on a movie set. And guess what? Nobody taught him how to behave or how to act. They just let him go. And he chose to be the leprechaun.
Yes. And here's the thing. Once again.
And it was crazy.
And once again, like I said, writer, director, there's a whole host of people in here. And I was like, if those two people didn't come out and say, this is not what we want to see on screen. That's not what I wrote. For these characters,
nobody stepped up, Yax, and said that because they knew that anything they wrote on the page was way worse than what he was doing, which they didn't think could get worse. Let me just say this: there's a love interest with Gyllenhaal's Dalton with an ER doctor, just like in the original film. But here, it's totally forced; it goes nowhere. We don't know her; we don't care about her. There, at one point, she like tries to make a move on him. And he's like, oh, is this a date? Dude, Dalton's making sweet love to, was it Laura Dern?
Yeah.
Kelly Lynch.
Kelly Lynch.
Under the moonlight. Like, he's a Romeo. Gyllenhaal, is this a date or something? Come on, dude.
That's the line, though, man.
Is this a date or something? Huh?
That's the line.
I put that character, I believe the character's name was Ellie. Attractive young girl, the actress, I put her in the same category, like I said, with Frankie and with the teenage girl.
Real quick, I'm going to jump ahead to the end of the movie. I love how this is total 2024 Roadhouse. Hey, you can never be with Dalton, blah, blah, blah. Okay. She goes separate way.
I agree with what you're saying, though.
She goes her separate way and just ditches him, and it makes sense in this movie because who'd want to be with this fucking vapid asshole? Anyway, there's also a couple of young bouncers that an uninspired Dalton trains that goes fucking nowhere. That was one of the best parts of the original Roadhouse, was him grooming the young staff of the Double Deuce. Now, just, hey, punch him in the nuts. Oh, okay. There was no,
be nice.
No, there's none of that. There's none of that. The whole movie takes over 2 hours to go absolutely fucking nowhere. I'm not mad that they remade Roadhouse. I'll always have the original to watch whenever I want to. I'm mad because the people who made this heaping pile of crap clearly weren't fans of the original film and what it did right. And they clearly thought they knew how to do it better. The end result was that they did everything wrong, wasting everyone who pushes the play button's precious time. I'll happily watch High Noon on Makeout Planet. Remember that? Episode 136? I'll watch that 10 more fucking times rather than ever giving this abomination of cinema another ounce of my energy.
Now,
good riddance. I've never in 10 years of doing this goddamn podcast had this much vitriol. And it's not like, okay, it's a disgruntled filmmaker. You can't handle people actually. No, if this is what,
I'm not going to say that about
if
you.
If this is what gets greenlit, hey man, I'm sleeping good at night. That romantic comedy, one but you that I mentioned in the fire pit session. They made a horrible movie, but I never doubted that they thought they were making a horrible movie. I don't see how, with the caliber, Doug Liman has directed a bunch of great movies. Oh, get this. He recently said this, a direct quote about his Roadhouse. The movie is fantastic. Maybe my best.
Bullshit.
Dude made Swingers, Go, The Bourne Identity.
The guy didn't give a shit. I'm sorry. He didn't give a shit.
And I'm sure it will bring the house down and possibly have the audience dancing in their seats during the end credits.
Which leads
me to believe that somebody out in Hollyweird needs to do a wellness check on Doug Liman ASAP, because that dude has fucking lost a screw in his head.
Well, I'm also curious as to how much he got paid for this, because that might be the reason.
Probably a lot.
Yeah, because I think that this movie fails majorly in two categories. One is script writing, which is undeniable, and then the second one is in directing. We can talk about actors and actresses and whatever, but, you know, without direction or without a director who gives a fucking shit and without screenwriters, I mean, it's a horrible project. It really is. But if I were to look at some things, point out two of the major things that I think that this movie failed at, it's those two. People can say what they think about Gyllenhaal, people saying what they think about Connor, you know, whatever. It's the director and the script writers who are at blame here. And maybe the producers. Maybe the producers are like, fuck you and your ideas. This is the thing that we're doing. I'm paying the dollars.
To go to your point, Todd, on you know, Hetfield's collaboration with DE and it's just selling this thing that we just talked about set an Amazon Prime record the first week of it dropping live, 50 million views.
Of course, because it's got Roadhouse in the title.
Doug Liman was furious. He boycotted the premiere at South by Southwest because he claimed he was under the impression that it would have a theatrical release. Everything that was released from Amazon and even some of the actors were like, we always knew this was going to be a Prime movie. Like, but he swears that he was told it would get a theatrical release.
Are you fucking kidding?
50 million people hit the play button on this thing. So, you know what? Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
It's the most
watched.
It's the most watched film, original film since Amazon bought MGM Studios.
But it also speaks to how many people either had fond memories of the original Roadhouse and wanted to see a remake, an adaptation of, or just something new to the original.
It capitalized on the people that wanted to see Roadhouse.
Well, look. I was
And I'll say yes to that, but also say to all the people about MMA, McGregor, so on and so forth.
Post Malone. I'll say
this.
It
wasn't even advertised.
Look, the only way we're going to be satisfied is if we recreate this. We go to the pub. Tut, you play that guy with a knife in his boot. Yaks, you grab Tut by the leg, twist his fucking leg, drag him outside, and then we're all going to be happy.
And it would have probably been a better project than this.
Oh, wait, you guys did that 2 weeks ago, didn't you? And I'm up
here. Yes, we did. And my nuts are still swollen. Well, hey, folks. I can't remember a show that was this heated. I don't know if Tut's just very angsty and wanted to go at it, but I liked it. It was fun. And I certainly have no ill will towards Conor McGregor. I want to make that very clear.
Neither do I.
The doctor, I know I called him a leprechaun a few times, and I apologize for that. And
called you that.
He seems like a guy who would appreciate a sincere apology. But the doctor certainly enjoyed his whiskey. I think we all enjoyed our beers tonight.
Absolutely.
And they all paired really well with the Shade of Black cigar. So three thumbs up on the cigar. And hopefully you got some beer ideas to go forward with that. Yeah, this is fun. I liked it. Give us some links.
All right. So first of all, you're going to want to join us on Facebook, Tuesday Night Cigar Club. You're definitely going to want to hit us up on YouTube, Tuesday Night Cigar Club there. You can join us on Instagram at TNCCcast. But here's the cool thing. If you go over to our website, TuesdayNightCigarClub.com, there's this banner, Famous Smoke Shop. Now, you can't get what we smoked on tonight because it's still in development.
No, it's out there. It's live on the Famous site. You can go to Famous. I just
fucked that up. Like
you can go to Famous, type in.
Script.
Type wrong in, again, Tuttle.
Man, you're wrong all over the place. Type in the S-84 Shade to Black. Boxes are up on the site, ready to sail. Type in promo code TNCC20. $20 off a box. You can't beat that.
$20 off a box, and that is definitely fucking good because with this cigar priced around $10, it's a great fucking deal. Get you $20 off on that. That's great because I was under the impression that this was still under development because of the white band.
No, PCA was 2 weeks ago in Vegas, the trade show, and they've shipped, man. Everyone's got it. So, if you liked the thoughts of white pepper spice with some saltiness and mustiness with a back finish of graham cracker and toasted marshmallow with some cedar and leather on the draw, who the hell doesn't want that in their lives? You can buy this right now at FamousSmokeShop.com and save $20.
I'm just going to say, if you're a cigar smoker, just go try it. It's a really interesting cigar.
As I predicted, my allergy medicine is now expiring at the stroke of midnight. I'm going to turn into a pumpkin. Dude, tonight was fun, guys.
I enjoy it.
Maybe I need to not make show notes moving forward because I felt like that went pretty smooth without it. Maybe I've been wasting hours of my life all these years. Excuse me.
Well, I don't think show notes would have helped to give any coherency to the film.
Excuse me.
Why spend more effort than the writers of this script did?
Yeah, exactly.
We've already done that.
Exactly.
I'm not kidding, I'm fading. So thank you everyone for tuning in. May the wings of liberty never lose a feather. Let's get out of here. Sayonara, motherfuckers. We'll see you soon. Bye.
For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas, please visit O'BriensTemple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky. And for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well.